Ready? Yeah, okay.
Good evening. I call to order the regular meeting of the Grover Beach City Council, Monday, April 22nd, 27th, excuse me. Today is April 27th, 2026. This meeting may also be viewed on cable channel 20 in Grover Beach and is available on live streaming on www.slo-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during this meeting by attending the meeting or calling 805-321-6639. The phone line is open now. Tonight, our flag salute will be presented by Emery Plant, and she'll come on up here and I'll talk about her a little bit. Come on up. Perfect. Emery is 9 years old and in the third grade at Grover Heights Elementary School. Emery's favorite subject in school is math. She also likes art. She enjoys living on the Central Coast because she likes the ocean and the beautiful sunsets. She likes to swim, so she loves the warm weather too. After high school and college, Emery would like to be an artist, a vet, or maybe a doctor. Those are all really good choices. Outside of school, her hobbies include roller skating, riding her scooter, soccer, basketball, and hanging out with her friends. Emery is accompanied by mom, dad, and grandma. So if you will all join me in the flag salute.
Say it again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We'll now move on to the roll call. City Clerk Sims.
Councilmember McCory Driscoll.
Here.
Councilmember Tuggle.
Here.
Councilmember Weirich.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Here.
Mayor D.
Here. Okay. On to closed session announcements. City Attorney Thompson.
On Monday, April 8th, 2026, the council met in closed session to discuss conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation. The council reconvened at 8:43 into open session, and there was no reportable action taken.
All right, thank you. Now on to agenda review. Council members, do any of you have any questions or changes that you would like to make? If not, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Nope, we have consensus. Okay, we have an incredible ceremonial calendar today. So the first one we are going to do is the proclamation recognizing May as Bike Month. And I have asked Councilmember Tuggle to read this one.
Proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council proclaiming May 2026 as National Bike Month. Whereas the bicycle is a viable and environmentally sound form of transportation and an excellent form of recreation. Whereas San Luis Obispo County offers urban and rural cycling routes popular to riders statewide. And whereas California hosts the longest segment of internationally popular Pacific Coast bike route, considered one of the most scenic biking trails anywhere in the world, bringing bicycle tourism in the form of hundreds of cross-country and local bicyclists each year. Whereas these bicycling activities and attractions have great potential to have a positive impact on San Luis Obispo County's economy and tourism industry and to stimulate economic development by making the state attractive to businesses and citizens who enjoy the out-of-doors and healthy lifestyles. And whereas creating bicycle-friendly communities has been shown to improve citizens' health, well-being, and quality of life, to boost community spirit, to improve traffic safety and to reduce pollution and congestion. And whereas May has been declared National Bike Month for each of the last 70 years and is so again in 2026. Whereas millions of Californians will experience the joys of bicycling during the month of May through educational programs, races, commuting events, trail work days, helmet promotion, charity events, or just getting out and going for a ride. And whereas the League of American Bicyclists, Cal Bike, bicycle clubs, and advocacy organizations, schools, parks, and recreation departments, police departments, hospitals, companies, and civic groups throughout California will be promoting bicycling as a leisure activity as well as an environmentally friendly alternative to the automobile during the month of May 2026. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Grover Beach City Council does hereby officially proclaim May 2026 as National Bike Month in Grover Beach, and urges all citizens to support bicycling, to participate in events planned, and urges all road users to share the road safely with bicyclists.
Thank you. And I don't believe anybody from SLOCOG is here to accept. Is there? Oh, yes, go ahead. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Carl Tupper. And I am the executive director of San Luis Obispo County APCD, Air Pollution Control District. And I'm honored to accept this proclamation on behalf of SLOCOG and its rideshare program. And they're the ones who really coordinate Bike Month and lots of alternative transportation activities in our county and Rideshare Week each October. No one from SLOCOG was able to be here tonight, so they asked me, or they asked APCD if we could accept it on their behalf. And APCD and SLOCOG appreciate this recognition, and we invite the community to join us in celebrating the power of the bicycle, a simple yet transformative way to create healthier people and cleaner air. This May, there will be more than 40 events across the county designed to get people out of their cars and onto bicycles, from Bike to School Day, which is Wednesday, May 6th, to bike breakfasts, group rides, movie screenings, community events. We really think there's something for everybody. And in addition to getting people onto bikes, we also hope to build community. These events bring people together of all ages and backgrounds, and we encourage everyone to connect, meet a neighbor, and be part of this welcoming and growing movement. So whether you are a daily commuter like myself, a weekend explorer, or just getting on a bike for the very first time, we think, you know, there's something in it for everybody. The APCD has proudly partnered in Bike Month for over two decades. From our perspective, you know, transportation remains one of the largest sources of air pollution locally and nationwide. So supporting low emission or no emission transportation is a key priority of the Air District. And choosing a bike, even occasionally, is a meaningful step towards reducing those emissions and can also save you some money and improve your health. So to learn more about Bike Month events, we encourage everyone to visit the Rideshare website, which is irideshare.org. And for more information on air quality and how to help protect our blue skies, you can visit the APCD online at slowcleanair.org. And look forward to seeing you out there this next month on your bicycles. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Perfect. Now we get to take a photo, so you don't get to walk away. All right, thank you. Okay, now we will go on to the proclamation for Professional Municipal Clerks Week, May 3rd through 9th, 2026. And I ask Councilmember Wyrick to read this one for us.
Thank you, Mayor. It's my privilege to read the proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council declaring May 3rd through May 9th, 2026 as Professional Municipal Clerks Week. Whereas the professional municipal clerk is a time-honored and vital role of local government that exists throughout the world. And whereas the professional municipal clerks provide the professional link between the citizens, the local governing bodies, and agencies of government at all levels. And whereas professional municipal clerks have pledged to be ever mindful of their neutrality and impartiality, rendering equal service to all. And whereas professional municipal clerks are the backbone of local government operations, working behind the scenes to oversee key functions like record keeping, election management, legislative documentation, and maintaining public trust through transparency and accountability. And whereas professional municipal clerks continually strive to improve the administration of municipal clerk functions through participation in education programs, seminars, workshops, and the annual meetings of their state, provincial, country, and international professional organizations. And whereas Professional Municipal Clerks Week was started back in 1969 by the International Institute of Municipal Clerks and officially declared on the first week of May through a proclamation signed by President Ronald Reagan in 1984. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Gore Beach City Council does hereby officially proclaim May 3rd through 9th, 2026 as Professional Municipal Clerks Week in Grover Beach, and urge all citizens to recognize the service of our municipal clerks in Grover Beach for their role in ensuring transparency, efficiency, and smooth operation of local government.
And we have our wonderful City Clerk Sims to accept this proclamation.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and esteemed Council. I want to thank you all for the recognition for the Professional Municipal Clerks Week on behalf of my Deputy City Clerk, Nicole Rotana, who is not here, and myself. We greatly appreciate your recognition and support. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I take a photo? Council members, did you want to say anything to our wonderful clerk department?
Yeah, everybody's looking at you.
Just real quick, thank you. I don't know if everyone realizes what a great support you are to new city council people as we come on board, helping us navigate the way. And as a newer member of the city council, I just want to say thank you for all your department does for us here on city council and all you do for staff. Thank you very much.
And I also want to express my appreciation to, especially what Councilmember Corey Driscoll said, as far as once you joined the City Council, you helped me integrate very smoothly into everything too within your role. And also, I believe you got your cool accreditation credential and stuff the other day too, so congratulations on that as well.
Thank you.
I appreciate your support and your patience when I don't always get back to keeping me with the rails on. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you've been a big help to me for over the years, and I really appreciate you and all you do for the staff and for us. You do a fabulous job. Thank you so much.
You are the best of the best. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Now we will move on to our final item for our ceremonial calendar. And I have the honor, sorry, it's a big frame. I have to pick it up. There we go. I have the honor to be reading the proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council recognizing Greg Ray upon his retirement as Public Works Director, City Engineer. Whereas Greg began working for the City of Grover Beach as the city's first in-house Public Works Director, City Engineer, in 2010, having served previously for the City of Pismo Beach along with the private sector, where he engaged with every agency in the area. Whereas Greg began his role as director as one of only two employees in the Public Works Engineering Division and the only engineer with a significant workload of public infrastructure maintenance, development, and permit applications, water and sewer utility needs, and other tasks. And whereas Greg has played a key role as director for numerous infrastructure projects, including three phases of improvements on West Grand Avenue, expansion of the train station into a multimodal facility with additional parking, improvements at many park facilities, and development and implementation of the Ramona Garden Park Rehabilitation Project. And whereas Greg has also supported the maintenance division responsible for 24/7 maintenance of public facilities, systems, and assets to the community depends on every day. And whereas Greg was pivotal in the development and implementation of the Measure K-14 Street Bond Measure approved by voters in 2014, which has repaired over 70% of local streets, and where his comment about the potential need to purchase a motor grader to create gravel streets given deteriorating street conditions helped galvanize efforts for the bond. And whereas Greg has been a trusted subject matter expert in water and sewer issues and has managed the city's utilities carefully and cost-effectively while highlighting long-standing and emerging needs for the city to address. And whereas Greg has consistently carried out his duties in a thoughtful and proficient manner in various policy areas involving various acronyms, including SLOCOG, CEQA, ADA, GIS, SOQ, SWPPP, MGD, and ROW. And there will be a test later. And whereas Greg has overseen the growth and development of the Public Works Department to meet community needs and council priorities with a legacy of improvements throughout the city that have helped make Grover Beach a better place for future generations. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council expresses its gratitude and recognition to Greg Ray for his 16 years of dedicated service to the city of Grover Beach. Now I'll pass it over to City Manager Matt Bronson.
Thank you, Mayor and Council Members. Good evening to you. Just a few words as City Manager. This is a very noteworthy moment. Any retirement is a noteworthy moment, particularly after 16 years of service to the city, especially at the executive level. There are various events that we're holding for Greg, but having a public recognition tonight with a proclamation seemed to be a fitting example. Think of the numerous presentations, probably hundreds of presentations that he has given right across the room over these last 16 years. And think back to where Grover Beach was in 2010, when Greg was hired as our first in-house public works director, city engineer, compared to where we are today in the city and all the different changes that have taken place over the last 16 years. All the different projects that were referenced in the proclamation, Measure K-14 in particular, as that truly was coming up through Greg's tenure and discussing the need for better local streets and the investment the community made in delivering on that promise. And now, 12 years later, over 70% of local streets are completed, and we have a game plan to finishing the last five projects. So that's a big part of the legacy that Greg has helped lead over these last 16 years, not to mention the day-to-day work on encroachment permits, permit applications, utility connections, all the work that Public Works does day in, day out. As some of you know, I like to quote the Athenian oath about public service, and a key part of it that I always think about is, we will transmit this city not only not less, but greater, better, and more beautiful than it was transmitted to us. I believe Greg's contribution over the last 16 years really embodies the Athenian oath and the service he's created. And one of the changes that also took place about 5 years ago was installing really cool beachy blue street signs across the city. And so to honor that, we have a sign, a customized sign, for the Ray Way. I'll let Mr. Ray and his wife Carrie, who's here tonight as well, decide where this goes, where the best fit for the Ray Way would be. That's up to them. But thank you, Carrie, for being here this evening, and we look forward to hearing about your adventures after Greg steps away here in a couple of weeks. But join me in recognizing Greg Ray for his contributions.
Before Mr. Ray comes up, I would like to open it up to the public if anybody would like to make any comments. Seeing nobody come forward. Oh, no, go ahead. Okay. Sorry, I go very fast.
Yes. Good evening, Mayor and Council Members. I'm Rosemarie Gaglione. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Pismo Beach. And I feel kind of cheated that I barely got a year and a half working with Greg Ray. But in that short time, I will tell you that he has my respect, even my people have tremendous respect for him. He's not only a great engineer, but he has, thinking of the Athenian note, he's a man of integrity. And to find the talent, drive, and integrity, everything all in one person, is unfortunately rather uncommon these days. So I wish Greg a wonderful retirement. I will say I'm sure you're going to find another public works director, but you're not going to replace Greg Ray. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to come up and make any comments? All right. Seeing nobody come forward, we'll have Mr. Ray come forward.
That was a lot. my emotions run high, and so I'm glad I wrote this down. So first of all, thank you for the kind words and the wonderful recognition. I can't believe it's been 16 years. I still remember, it seems like yesterday, standing in front of a council and being introduced by a city manager as a new employee. It just doesn't seem like time could possibly have gone that fast. I'd like to recognize past and present city councils, past and present city managers, in particular Matt Bronson and Bob Peralt, department heads that I've served with, chiefs of police, fire chiefs, certainly co-workers throughout City Hall and at the corporate yard, and definitely my staff who I see in the back of the room. They're just part of the many teams that I was a part of, and I'm honored to have worked with each of them. When I look around the city, I'm so proud. You know, the progress and the improvements that we made together. None of this was alone. I was always part of a much larger team. Thank you, Mayor and City Council, for your leadership and steadfast support. I'm deeply grateful for the chance to serve. When I look around the room at the people that will be here after I retire, I know you're in good hands, and I'm confident the city will continue to prosper. And last but not least, thank you to my wonderful wife, Carrie, and my two beautiful children, Madison and Mitchell. They had to put up with me for 16 years of geeking out on every single detail of every project and every problem and every challenge that this city faced. Probably a handful of them solved somewhere around 2 in the morning when I couldn't sleep. But thank you again for all of your support. And thank you again. Good night.
I think we want to say some words first. All right. We want to say some words first, and then we'll have to take a photo with the Ray Way. All right. Who would like to start?
I'll start. I just wanted to thank you for everything that you've done for our city and support, and also wish you the best of luck as you transition. It's a weird transition, and from what I hear from my husband, takes a little bit to get used to, but he is sleeping better, so I hope you too get good night's rest and start creating different types of memories for you and your family. Thank you.
Well, thank you for all the years of service, Greg, and I'll always remember 2010 is the same year I got married, so we share that same anniversary. You've been a steady and knowledgeable leader, helping us guide through the infrastructure and your institutional knowledge, and everything that you brought to the table is going to be missed. I'm sure Matt has you on speed dial. So enjoy your vacation, your retirement, and wish you many years of happiness. Thank you.
So, Ray, as someone who has retired twice, good luck with your retirement. I hope that you find joy and happiness and purpose in the next adventure in your life. And I just want to say, I remember when I came onto City Council and I met with all the department heads. There are very few people that I can remember in my life that has just truly generated wow factor from the very first impression, and you were one of those people. You are a wow factor kind of guy. Your wealth of knowledge, the expertise that you have brought to our city, as was mentioned, is irreplaceable. Not that we won't have a new person in your stead, but it won't be you. And I, too, want to know where Ray Way ends up. So, again, thank you and congratulations on your next adventures.
And I want to extend my congratulations to you, too. It's a very well-earned retirement. And, you know, since being on the council, I've always appreciated not just your technical expertise across a broad variety of areas, too, but also the way you translate it for us as well. Since, yeah, I'm not an expert in all these areas, too, sometimes it's like, well, what does that mean? And you describe it in very practical terms that, you know, most people could, you know, pick up very quickly, which has always been good stuff for us up here. And I think people sometimes forget you actually have a dual role, which both of them are jobs in themselves, too. So the fact that you've managed both of them across, you know, these different years and stuff has been helpful. And even before being on the council, you clearly have worked on a lot of the signature infrastructure work that, you know, had been asked by residents ever since, you know, I was a kid, and delivered on those too. I mean, really, it's, you know, fixed up the entire town in ways that people who haven't lived here that long would not understand. So I appreciate, you know, having lived here for quite a while and stuff, you know, the work that you've actually produced that, you know, I'm sure you're not going to be driving by going like, you know, hey, I did that street too, but you did, were part of those streets though. So I truly appreciate it. And yes, have a fun, relaxing, enjoyable retirement. And yeah, your family should see around a lot more too, so that'll be good as well. Congrats.
Thank you. Mr. Ray, I just have a couple of, we got some letters, and so I just want to read them for you really quickly. From James Wordley at SlowCog, he wanted to say, please share SlowCog staff's appreciation for the many years of working with Greg. He has been an asset to our Technical Transportation Advisory Committee for the region and for Grover Beach, both acting as a member and as the committee chair. And then we also received a letter from former Mayor Karen Bright. Unfortunately, she was unable to be here. She had been called to a family duty this evening. But she did say, I did, though, want to express my sincere appreciation for the years of service you have provided to assist in the forward motion of our city. In my opinion, a few of the most significant values you brought to the city are your calm demeanor when having to translate technical issues so that the council and residents alike were able to follow the logic behind the issue, the ability and willingness to work in cooperation with the other professionals and municipalities for the benefit of not only Grover Beach, but the region, your expertise in overseeing construction projects and collaborating with various contractors was integral to the ongoing success of the K-14 projects and many others, your diligence and success in keeping the city compliant with ever-changing regulations and safety requirements. All in all, an exceptional job well done. Here's wishing you lots of family time, fun, and sleep. Best wishes in your retirement. And then as for me, thank you so much for all the work that you've done. I mean, I would just like to echo my colleagues, and I think the word translate is a really key word here, because there's a lot that goes on in your department, and a lot of us who don't have this engineer brain can't really understand it, and you've been able to explain it to us and translate it to us. So thank you so much for supporting our council and for supporting our staff and our community, and you've really created a legacy here with all the projects that you've completed. So thank you so much. Now let's take a picture. Okay, that was it for our ceremonial calendar. We do not have any presentations tonight, so we will now move on to public communications. Our meetings are designed to proceed in an organized and efficient manner to effectively conduct city business. The council welcomes and values public comments, which can be shared at the designated time from the podium using the microphone. The council requests that all comments be addressed to the council as a whole and that speakers refrain from directing individual comments at staff members. To maintain an orderly process, we kindly ask all attendees to refrain from creating disruptions during the meeting, interrupting speakers who are addressing the council, or impeding the council's ability to conduct business. Should disruptions occur, the council may need to take certain measures such as calling a recess, clearing the chambers, or in rare circumstances, canceling the meeting. We greatly appreciate your understanding and cooperation in maintaining a productive environment that serves our entire community effectively. During this time, the council will allow public communication. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on or discuss items not on the agenda. I do have some speaker slips here. David Swift, followed by Lauren Westfall.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. David Swift, North Grover. I came to you in the beginning of March and had a question for you about Resolution 2207 that was passed by three members of the council on June 27, 2022. That resolution, gifted is probably not the right word, but basically provided taxpayer-funded health and welfare benefits to the part-time council members. And what I said at that point in time was that the unintended consequence of that benefits being provided to council members is that for those people on heavily subsidized medical, they run the risk of losing their medical benefits should they run for and be elected to council. About half of the Grover Beach households actually qualify for heavily subsidized medical, either through Medi-Cal or through Covered California. So if you think about it that way, about half of the households that could produce qualified people to run for office would find themselves in a financial hardship should they be elected and then be offered the health and welfare benefits that are currently being provided to the council. And so what I'm asking you to do is to agendize and rescind Resolution 2207 Part 1B. That was the piece that, along with giving raises on the Part 1A to the council, also provided the health and welfare benefits. And again, this this is a perk that was provided to the council that actually has a pretty severe unintended consequence for those people that might want to run for council that are on subsidized medical like Medi-Cal or Covered California, that they could lose their existing benefits because of that offering. I would ask you to consider that. If you have questions about it, please reach out to me and I can give you more detail. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Lauren Westfall, followed by Brenda Auer.
Gee, just think how much money you guys can save and have in the general fund by doing that. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. According to the December 2007 West Grand Business Corridor Report, the city had hired a number of consultants since 1998 to present to conduct reports and studies regarding development of downtown Grand Avenue to improve tax revenue, attract business, tourism, and be pedestrian friendly. In 2007, the total cost for the consultants only was about $300,000. Today, the cost will probably be about $2 million plus. This does not include the in-house staff salaries. Reports indicated in 2004, a visionary workshop, 50 people attended. That included residents and businesses. In 2011, approximately 40 people. Now you're lucky if you get three, and none of them are by business owners. I wonder why. Is it because you guys are not listening? In the report, I will quote, and this is in the 2007, having a strong, well-run organization can mean the difference between success and failure. Could lack of participation be because the city fails to listen to the community? Has council or staff ever heard of the Aurora Valley Car Club? They used to have cruise night here in Grover. They donated a banner, which the city failed to upkeep. The club ended up moving to AG. Just like the city failed to keep up the gazebo that was donated at Ramona Park. There used to be weekly farmer markets held at Ramona Park, also given up to AG. I ask you, why did Grover Beach give these revenues to our neighboring cities that are seem to be making a lot more money than we are in tax revenue? These reports state the key points that the people attended from the visioning workshop. Create an attractive area along the waterfront. Preserve enhanced community or beach community. Increase tax base and only allow 2 to 3 story buildings. Do not allow 5 story, and it clearly says that in the report. Create pedestrian-friendly commercial areas on 2nd Street and Front Street. Report shows examples from Barkley, The Village, and San Luis. With different council's options, actually on Front Street, it's profitable if the city, with the sales tax, puts out outdoor cafes and small local shops, which will allow the allow the money to go into the city versus the developer's pocket. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Westfall. Brenda Auer.
Good evening, everyone. Brenda Auer, Auer Real Estate. Last meeting, I suggest you to all read that report. It's really eye-opening. First of all, miracle rain. April showers bring May flowers. We haven't heard that in a while. I've contacted several of the city departments regarding the water that runs down Grand Avenue from 12th to 11th, 3 or more times a week. I again ask you address this issue, please. Until the city has more money to address Grand Avenue drainage, I again ask that the city control the water with sandbags or something, etc., during heavy rains at 11th and Grand. We will have a new coffee house moving in, and the water comes over the curb and on the sidewalk during heavy rain. This is something I think the city should look into and fix temporary. We've all heard the city during workshops say the community and stakeholders. I ask tonight for a list of these stakeholders to be disclosed this evening, please. It is time for this council, city manager, and administration to step up to the county and to the state. No more fear stories. Grover Beach is unique and one of a kind. Why are you not representing us to the best of for our best interests? Why have you not protected our small community from excessive high rises and Pismo Beach using us for their poop plant? The people have spoken. The people had a successful recall and repeal after the council refused to listen to the will of the people. Again today, the council has refused to listen to the will of the people and forced them to hit the streets and get petitions signed. The people have spoken. When will this council begin to listen to the people? Does Grover Beach need to clean house and get engaged people on the council and management who will really listen? The people have spoken. Will you listen? Those petitions were over 1,256. We shouldn't have to go and do that. You should just listen to the people. Not many people are here, but 1,256 people spoke loud and clear. City clerk was sued 2 years ago for not doing a proper job of her job. For her to get honored tonight kind of grinds me a little, but go ahead, read the lawsuit. You'll find for yourself how the judge decided. Now we get to elect our city clerk to make sure that they're following the right instructions. I've made 2 requests for communication that goes on here during the meeting. You ask for us to be really diligent and not bring our computers and disrupt, but I see everyone on their cell phones and computers, and I'd like to know what other communications going on.
Thank you for your comments. I do not have any other speaker slips. Does anybody else wish to come up and speak? Yes.
Hi, Pamela Storton, Grover Beach resident, council, mayor, staff. Thank you. I wanted to thank Councilwoman Tuggles for mentioning in public comments I left after the last meeting that she'd like to see us look at potentially parks or open spaces in the coastal area, and I really appreciate those words to start having that discussion. I've been driving the streets and looking at the zoning map and really just looking and seeing what could we do to protect our views but still allow private development. I am a pro property rights person, but I'm not pro property rights when it dismantles a community where we can put some things in place that really are a win-win for the community and the developers. And just a small little, you know, idea that popped up when Matt talked about the city manager talked about the DIFs, that those could go to parks. It just really triggered, hey, maybe it's not just park like we see a park, but maybe it's an open space and DG or concrete, or maybe in some of these, because everything that I'm thinking of on these 10 to 12 streets where we could keep our views going west would be between 60 and 90 feet on each street based on sidewalks. And if we really look at that, it looks like there really are only about six streets that would maybe be impacted on this side of their tracks. So if you all could drive west and take a look and look at the distance between the city streets and the tracks and envision all of these are commercial zoned. CIC, CC, CI, CVS. Maybe it's something like, oh, that's commercial. We could do a farmer's market. Maybe the developer and the city can come to terms and say, where those coastal views are, we're not going to build high. There are some that are single story right now that get in the way a little bit going out towards the ocean. But maybe it's just have parking lots in those spaces. Talk with the developers and say, keep that 70, 60 feet parking lot or an open space or a farmer's market area, or what? How could we get creative just to keep those open and still create win-wins for the community? That's what I'm just asking you to do. Drive the streets, take a look at those vistas and views. If they're gone, they're gone forever. We don't get them back. And we do have dune views, and we do have preserved views, and we do have ocean views. They may not be that big one in Pismo, but we have them, and I hope you consider saving them. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else wish to come up and speak on items not on the agenda? Yes.
Hi, Catherine Sells. I live on Mentone. I brought this up a couple of months ago, maybe longer, about grants to give residents rain collection barrels. I've looked through the internet. Those grants are out there. Michigan got a grant for the whole state. It's a possibility, and I think we really need to look into that. And the 4th Street intersection, north and south on 4th Street, you can't make a left turn. They need turn signals, dedicated turn signals. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else wish to come up and speak on items not on the agenda? Seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line? All right. Well, then I will close public communications, and we will move on to the consent agenda. So the following routine items listed on the consent portion of the agenda are scheduled for consideration as a group. We have the treasurer's reports for the period of March 1st through March 31st, 2026. Treasurer's reports for the 2025 sewer bond account. Minutes of the City Council meeting on Monday, April 13th, 2026, Ramona Garden Park Community Donation Policy Amendment, and introduction and first reading of an ordinance to amend Chapter 119 Fireworks of Title 11 Business Regulations to regulate social hosts allowing illegal fireworks. So I will now open public comment on the consent agenda. I do not have any speaker slips for this item. Does anybody wish to come up and speak?
Good evening. Question on the Ramona gazebo. Looking at your agenda package, everything states the lifetime of 10 to 15 years or the lifetime, whichever comes first. That includes the plaque, the benches, the amphitheater. You guys didn't take care of the Arroyo Valley Car Club's banner. You didn't take care of the gazebo. Do you think maybe that is why Plus, you guys took out the memorial plaques without even informing people. Do you think that that maybe could be the reason why nobody has donated for that amphitheater? Because they know that you guys do not plan on caring for it. It says 25 years or the lifespan. A gazebo, a wooden gazebo, is 15 to 25 years, as long as it's well maintained. I don't even think that gazebo was there for 10 years, maybe 15. But you guys didn't maintain it. You guys either removed it because of the homeless or you removed it because of the termites. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Does anybody else wish to come up and speak on the consent agenda? Seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line? Okay, I will close public comment for the consent agenda. Council members, do you have any questions or want to pull any items? If not, then can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I motion to approve the consent agenda.
May I have a second?
Second.
May I have a roll call, please?
Councilmember McCrory Driscoll?
Yes.
Councilmember Wyrick?
Yes.
Councilmember Tuggle?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert?
Yes.
Mayor D?
Yes. All right, thank you very much. We do not have any public hearings tonight, so we'll move on to regular business. Item number 9, the authorization to amend the general plan and zoning designation for a proposed residential development project at 1591 Farrell Road. And I will call on community development. Nope. Excuse me. I apologize. I'm so sorry. Before I get into that, Councilmember Wyrick.
Yeah, since my residence is within the legal sphere and stuff too, that of the project stuff too, I must recuse myself, but I will join the audience as just a member of the public who lives near there too. So I'm going to recuse myself right now.
Okay, thank you very much. I even wrote it down too. I'm so sorry. Thank you, Councilmember Wyrick. Now resident Wyrick. Okay, I will now call on Community Development Director Martin to provide the presentation.
Thank you so much. The item before you tonight is a request to authorize staff to initiate a general plan amendment, commonly referred to as a GPA, and a rezone for the property located at 1591 Farrell Road. This presentation will provide an overview of the site, the requested changes, and staff's recommendation based on the city's adopted general plan goals and policies. We're also joined this evening by the applicant and their representatives, and they'll be available for any questions or comments following staff's presentation. Would you progress it forward? It's not working on my end. Thank you. So as a reminder to the council and to the public, your council's not making a decision or approving the request for the development application that's being processed concurrently with this GPA and this rezone. The request is to authorize staff to initiate a GPA and rezone. This is a procedural item only that's provided through state law. It allows staff and the Planning Commission to conduct a full analysis, environmental review, and a public hearing before returning to your council for final consideration. So authorization this evening simply allows the process to begin. It doesn't guarantee an approval. So Altura Building Coastal Development LLC submitted a request for a general plan amendment, again commonly referred to as the acronym GPA, and a rezone from low density residential R1 to medium density residential R2. Concurrent processing of the development application will occur following your council's authorization. It's for a tentative subdivision map to create 30 residential lots and construct 30 single-story attached and detached residential units. There we go. The project site's comprised of two legal parcels totaling approximately 3 acres. The site is located at the northwest corner of South 16th Street and Farrell Road. There is an existing residence on the property. It's surrounded by established single-family neighborhoods on three sides with a drainage basin and Hero Park to the south and southeast, respectively. This would facilitate a proposed and concurrent application for a residential subdivision consisting of the 30 single-story units, including a mix of attached and detached homes. The site is designated low-density residential, or R1, and allows between 1 to 5 units per acre. R1 designation and zoning allows for single unit detached and attached homes, duplexes, accessory dwelling units, public and quasi-public uses, as well as similar and compatible uses. As mentioned, the site's approximately 3 acres, though it's 3.72 acres gross. This would provide for up to 18 units under the current zoning. Modifying it to R2 would allow for a maximum of 33 units. The R2 designation would allow for smaller lot, single unit attached and detached homes, duplexes, multi-unit residential developments, public and quasi-public uses, and similar and compatible uses. Residential density on R2, as you can see on your screen, it's considered medium density, and the range is 6 to 9 units per acre. So the key policy question here for your council is whether this site's appropriate for this modest increase in density. The project also includes a request for a tentative subdivision map that would allow for the construction of the 30 residential units, as I mentioned. They're single story. It's a mix of attached and detached. Each comes with a two-car garage for a total of 4 spaces per unit. So there are 2 additional spaces in the driveway approaching the garage for each unit. It has a looped street design. Again, this is concept in nature. We're not making a decision on the project this evening. It would take, as proposed, it would take access from 16th Street, and there's would be a designated private homeowners association associated with the project. Importantly, while density is increasing, all units are single story, which helps maintain compatibility with surrounding R1 development. The units include 2 separate architectural styles, including Craftsman and Spanish, as shown on your screen. And it also doesn't show the detached units, but the applicant's presentation will go a little bit more into detail on the different styles and their orientation. So getting into the actual general plan amendment and the rezone. So state law, specifically government code section 65358, gives the council the authority to authorize the general plan amendment. The GPA may be initiated by a property owner, may be initiated by city staff, or it may be initiated by your council. A GPA is considered a change to any general plan map or text, and the city may amend a general plan no more than 4 times per year. A rezone is a procedure to amend the city's official zoning map. It changes the boundaries of a zoning district, and the rezone can be processed concurrently with the GPA. So what are the steps to amend a general plan? The first is why we're here this evening. As I mentioned, state law requires that your council authorize staff to begin working on the project itself. If initiated, staff will conduct a comprehensive analysis and environmental review. That would include a traffic analysis, a phase one assessment, a soils report, biological report, as well as the various utility and infrastructure analyses that we require for larger development projects. It may also require historical analysis. The residence is over 50 years, which can typically require historical analysis, as well as an archaeological report. We also include, as part of the general plan amendment and rezone process, other department and agency involvement. Specifically, we will be providing referrals to our internal departments, including Public Works, Five Cities Fire, Grover Beach PD, as well as to our building division. We'll also look to receive feedback from our partnering agencies, including the South Sanitation District, the Airport Land Use Commission. This is located within the Oceano Land Use Plan planning review area, so it'll be reviewed by the ALUC. This is also required by state law to be referred to LAFCO, the Local Area Formation Commission. We'll also provide a referral to the APCD, that's the Air Pollution Control District, the Lucia Mara Unified School District, as well as Slow Health Counts, which looks at providing feedback on different subdivisions and creating healthy neighborhoods. Think walkable, complete streets, et cetera. Following staff's comprehensive review and analysis, we will make a recommendation to the Planning Commission, who will be responsible for making a recommendation to your council for final approval. Unlike other jurisdictions, the city has not formally adopted policy questions for GPA initiations. And so, for example, the County of San Luis Obispo looks at 3 different criteria, necessity, timing, and consistency with other plans and policies. So along those same lines, staff's gone above and beyond to prepare a series of questions for your council to kind of consider as I walk through the policy context that I'll outline in the next couple of slides. So the first questions, or sorry, the few questions that I've listed here, does the GPA reflect the city's vision for where different land uses should be located? Would the GPA and rezone conflict with other policies within the general plan? Will the GPA and rezone affect neighboring properties or the broader community? Are the GPA and rezone consistent with the city's land use principles and applicable laws? And lastly, is the timing of the GPA and rezone appropriate? So to help answer those questions, staff's identified the following goals and policies, the first being Land Use Policy 1.1. The amendment harmonize existing and new development. So the amendment would bring medium-density residential uses into a predominantly low-density residential zone, though there are some surrounding properties that are zoned neighborhood commercial that would provide for mixed use, which allows for a higher density of both residential and commercial uses. There's also a high-density zone within the immediate area that provides for even larger density than what's being proposed. So the lot sizes as well as the residential sizes are commensurate with the surrounding properties, leading to staff's initial consistency determination that it is consistent with Policy 1.1. The next, Land Use Policy 1.2, Complete Neighborhoods. The development application associated with the proposed amendment and rezone would create a complete and walkable neighborhood. It includes a vehicular loop. It would provide for 4 off-street parking spaces per residence and provide for private improvements maintained by the HOA. Land Use Goal 2, designate adequate land in a range of residential densities. So increasing the density in this location could be viewed as consistent. Approximately 23% of the city is designated R1, where only 11 is designated R2. So it would provide for some additional opportunities to provide smaller lot homes that still have that single family tie. They appear lower density by the way that they're designed. Lastly, Land Use Policy 2.3, Housing Choices. The proposed project's unlike other housing developments that we've seen recently, and it provides for smaller entry-level and modest homes. As for the city's housing element consistency, we looked at the following policies. 1.1, ensure an adequate supply of vacant or underutilized land for development or redevelopment. This is one of the larger sites remaining in the city that is available for redevelopment. Based on current zoning, the site is underutilized. We could have as many as, if subdivided, as many as 18 single-family residences on the property. Increasing the density would provide the city with more opportunity to build more homes. Policy 1.2, encourage development of a mix of different housing types, including multifamily and single family. Again, this is kind of single family-esque being proposed in a higher density residential zone. It could be seen as consistent with this policy. Lastly, multifamily housing development shall incorporate interesting architectural, structural, and design features. Based on the conceptual project that will come in front of the commission at a later date, we feel that it met this policy already and provides for some interesting architectural, structural design features associated with the Craftsman as well as the Spanish style. And lastly, all new dwellings shall meet state requirements for energy efficiency. It will comply with this subject to the conditions of approval of the project itself. So with that, staff does recommend that your council authorize staff to initiate the amendment to the city's general plan and official zoning map to change the land use designation and zoning designation from low density residential R1 to medium density residential R2 for purposes of developing a proposed housing project, including 30 single-story attached and detached residential units. I am going to end on our last slide to provide some guidance for your council should you need it. I'm available for any questions, and as I mentioned, the applicant's team has prepared a presentation as well.
Okay. Will the applicant be...
And this is probably the time for the applicant to come up and do the presentation, and then we can come back to the consideration. Okay. That's it.
Thank yes, so just much. Wanted to pause perfect. For any yeah. questions if you had them.
Perfect, thank you. I think we'll do the presentation first, and then we'll have some questions. Yes.
Hi, my name's... Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My name's Ian. I'm with Altua ABC Development, and this is Sergio with Eisman Design and Brian with Urban Planning Concepts to help us with the planning. I want to start off tonight with a story before we get into our presentation. I have a 3-year-old and 6-year-old daughter. and we actually ride our bikes to 16th Street Park all the time. And their two closest friends, they're also have a three-year-old and six-year-old, so there's three families. Now, one of those families lives on 4th Street. The other lives off Nosias Road. They both live with their parents because they make just enough not to qualify for low-income housing, but not enough to afford the million-dollar spec homes they're building in San Luis Obispo. So I want everyone to keep that in mind, because when we designed this project, we really tried to go towards the missing middle to make homes that were attainable and affordable and nice for families like my friends. So anyways, I just want everyone to keep that in mind. Oh, perfect. Thank you. Let's see. Okay. So what this is we teamed up with Cal Poly and actually did a study on what is the most underrepresented housing, what housing is needed the absolute most here in the Central Coast. And what they came back with is actually the missing middle, the exact type we're proposing, starter homes that working families can get into. This chart on the lower right shows all the new residents that Grover Beach has permitted in the last 10 years. And what we're looking at, of course, is orange are multi-units, green is ADUs, so garage conversions, people build them in their backyards, and the blue line is single-unit stories, or single-unit residences. And what I want to point out is in the last 10 years, Grover Beach has built 140 single residence units. Now, Planning Commission on their website, they actually have a tool where you can look at all the applications I've submitted like ours, all the ones that have been approved, and all the ones that are currently in planning. And I went through that, and in that list, there was only one other development proposing single-family homes, and it was 8 homes, and they're all 3 stories tall. So there are no single-story homes in the pipeworks for Grover Beach. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Brian.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm Brian Schwartz with Urban Planning Concepts. And we understand this is a conceptual review and mostly a policy decision, but our team has spent a lot of time on the plans, and we just kind of want to go through a little bit more of the details with you. And so that's the next couple of slides. So right now, we are proposing 30 single-family homes, 22 are paired or duplex units, 8 are detached. The unit sizes are approximately 1,300 square feet. That is a little bit smaller than what is in the surrounding area, consistent with some of the homes to the south, and a little bit smaller with some of the homes to the north and to the east. The lot sizes are approximately 3,700 to 6,300. Again, probably a little bit on the smaller range, and that is to make the homes a little bit more obtainable. What Ian just described is to try to get people into entry level, first time home buyers, local residents who can't quite afford that $1 million home. They're all 3-bedroom, 2-bath homes. They all are single story. They all have a small yard, small private fenced yard. They're not big yards. They are enough for a small patio, a barbecue, a table, chairs, maybe a little area for your pet or a dog or a garden or something like that, but they're not a large expansive yard. Each unit comes with 4 spaces per unit, 2 in the garage, 2 in the driveway. A couple different architectural models that vary a little bit in architectural features. And then Megan talked about the 2 different architectural styles. Those are compatible with the adjacent neighborhood. We're trying to fit into this neighborhood, not stand out. This is not multi-story. People are not going to have privacy concerns. There's not going to be people on balconies looking over into other people's yards or through their windows. We're really trying to scale it down and feel that this is a very appropriate place for this type of housing. Again, this is why is it this site? There's a number of reasons. This is, again, trying to fit a little bit of a smaller single family product into and complement the area and be compatible with the area. it doesn't sprawl into the ag lands or adjacent areas. It's adjacent to existing infrastructure. It's also a very flat site. It's relatively devoid of biological resources and other types of environmental impacts. Megan mentioned the number of studies. We've actually done some of those and submitted those at staff's request, traffic, biological resources, and so generally void of any, none of the studies that we submitted came up with any significant impacts. So this is a flat site that's going to kind of reduce, with minimal topography, that's going to reduce grading and impacts. Oh, lastly, sorry, am I going the wrong way? Yep. Oh, I just messed it up. How do I go back? Oh. Sorry about that. I just want to just say it's a great location next to Hero Park. So it's going to be a really good resource for any of the families and kids that that live there. There's the site. I think everyone's familiar with where it is. Megan already outlined the slide and the conceptual site plan, and it's a loop system, so it's two-way traffic. It's going to be really an efficient system, good for trash pickup, good for deliveries, emergency service vehicles. If they need to get in there, there's no backups, there's no dead ends. I'm going to turn it over to Sergio, kind of go through some of the architectural details.
Good evening. Sergio with Eisman Design, one of the project architects. This is not intended to be your typical tract home development. It's definitely a carefully thought out designed community. There's two plans, two styles of architecture, as you can see right here, and four variations on those styles, with the intent of providing cohesion in the design, but avoiding being overly repetitive. Maybe? I'm not sure if the plans are on there, but the layout is family-focused with three bedrooms, two baths. There was an emphasis on age-in-place design so that the models are single-story with no stairs throughout the design. The plans have a nice open concept with 10-foot ceilings, 8-foot windows and doors throughout, and intended to have coffered or vaulted in the living room or primary bedrooms. Here you can see the two style, or one of the styles, Craftsman. With the, on the left-hand side, you're seeing a warm board and batten with white trim, exposed kicker details, exposed rafters, shingle roof. On the right, you can see a slight variation on that with coastal color, lap siding, shake siding, no exposed rafters instead of fascia. And in between, there's this really nice planter that really helps to separate the two lots that are paired together. You know, 9 of the 30 are detached, but the ones that are attached really trying to focus on how those can feel like single-family residences. Oh, and the ones in the back are facing 16th Street. Those are backyard porches. Again, really trying to blend in with the neighborhood context and not stand out. In the front, there's also an entry porch that's kind of tucked off to the far sides. Here's pictures of the detached units, very, very similar, but just a little more separation between the two. Here's a Spanish style, with the one on the left having a beige stucco, unique window trim with a sill, clay tile that's very common with this style of architecture, exposed rafters with a painted fascia, a beige garage doors to be different from the Craftsman style. The one on the right is a cream stucco color, different window trim, sills, and treatment with a wainscot detail kind of throughout and a cornice stucco detailing on the eaves. Again, trying to really emphasize the not feeling so repetitive in a small ways. And you can see the porches in the back as well for the Spanish architecture. Here are the plans. I spoke previously on them. really generous layouts. They work really well for a family. This is the Type B unit, so there are more compact layout, with the Type A units being very similar with a different orientation that works better on the site just based on how it's laid out in the loop, with a laundry mudroom addition, which is obviously a really great feature for a family. This is the same Type A with the detached. You can just see a little separation. Most of them have a 4-foot separation down the middle, so 8 feet total there. And they'll all have some variation of yard depending on where they are laid out on the site, some a little bigger than others, but still, you know, nice little space. This is a great image just showing our real emphasis that this project has focused on being compatible with the neighborhood. You can see the homes across 16th Street, a lot of them are craftsman styles, and how we're taking cues on that detailing, the tones, the colors, the trim, treatment, and reflecting that in a really nice small
scale.
Can I
have sounds from the audience, please? Thank you so much. Sorry, it's a little bit distracting. Go ahead.
Yeah. Again, just similar image with the detached units. And I'll pass it on to Brian.
So there will be a homeowners association associated with the project that's going to be established through the CCNRs, the conditions, covenants, conditions, restrictions. That homeowners association will be responsible for the privately maintained streets, enforcement of parking. There's going to be no parking within the streets right now as proposed. There would be requirements that you park in your driveway or your garage. There would be signage for speed limits and probably 15 miles per hour. Keep it safe within those interior streets. They would be responsible for not just the maintenance of the roads, but common landscaping, perimeter walls, signage, stormwater detention facilities. And so this is the last slide. We've really tried to thoughtfully address this site with a product type that we felt that was going to be needed for the city and its residences, and especially those first-time homebuyers really struggling to get into the housing market and build some equity and feel like they don't have to leave to other areas and be forced out. So we've tried to design the homes to fit in, not to stand out. Single-story, providing a good number of parking spaces. We felt like this was an appropriate number based on typical parking demand, everyday parking demand. We understand parking is a big issue. I'm sure there's going to be people that talk about parking after our presentation. We can only plan, I think, for so much parking, and then there's going to be atypical situations where there may be an extra car or guest parking and stuff. We also do have frontage right along 16th Street. It's nearly 400 feet of parking along there that's going to accommodate a number of vehicles. And we're aware people don't want parking spilling over onto public street, but at least it's along our frontage. And I think that is typically something that you would see in any neighborhood where they may have an extra car or an extra vehicle. You may see some parking on the street. And so that's how we've designed it. It's also in compliance with city's parking requirements. Again, we've talked about the missing middle housing that we're trying to provide for. And I guess just to end, this is not in our slides, but I'm going to point this out just kind of more off the cuff. And if you look at the city's land use map there over on the side, you will see that the city's been actually planning for more density along Farrell. So if you go from on Farrell on 8th Street, you'll see high density residential right in the front there, right along all the way up to 13th and just past that too, right before you get to the site. So this seems to be a land use pattern that has been established. That's a high density. This one would be a medium density with the small lot. So I just kind of noticed that and thought I'd point that out. We agree with staff's assessment. We've read that staff report. We thought they did a great job. Really interesting about the 23% of single family compared to only the 11% for the medium density. So we agree with the recommendation. We respectfully request that you let us study this more, let staff study it more, and move this through the process. We're available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation, and I would like to echo those statements. I want to thank staff so much for the staff report. I really appreciate the fact that you put the every housing element policy and land use element policy and spoke to that specific policy in regards to this project. I appreciate the developers being here as well and painting the picture for us, even though tonight we are not discussing this project. We are just talking about initiating the staff moving forward with studying it more. So I just appreciate it. I have a lot of questions and a lot of comments, but we're talking about just moving forward with this study. So for I do have a couple of questions. So we've said it a lot, but I just want to clarify that this change that we're discussing tonight, going from R1 to R2, is not for height, but just for density, allowing, because we have this equation for acreage, that lot size, et cetera, that this is just for density.
Correct.
Okay. The other thing on page 2 of our staff report, the sentence starts with the authorization or initiation of this. There's a long process that we're moving forward with. So if it goes to a specific spot in the process and it stops, like let's say it doesn't pass an environmental review or doesn't meet staff standards as far as any of this process goes, police department, fire, Lucemar Unified School District, whatever it is, nothing gets changed then. It just stays R1 and nothing kind of moves forward.
Correct.
Okay. Those were my questions. So I will now pass it to my other council members for questions. Does anybody want to start? I'll start over here.
Megan, I have one question. If this were to happen and the change to R2 did go through for this parcel, would it apply in any way to any surrounding parcels?
No.
Okay. Thank you. The other questions I have are more developer related, but since this isn't just about theirs, I'll pass.
Okay. Questions to my right?
First of all, you referenced 3,700 to 6,000 square. Those very rough numbers. Lot size, is that for, would you have a duplex on 3,700, or would each duplex have 3,700?
Each one would be 3,700.
Hmm. Okay. And
as Sergio said too, with their own yards.
No. Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. I did have questions about parking and fire access if you're only parking on one side, but you're parking on no sides. So, and then you've already answered that. And for whatever it's worth, and I know this is the development part, but the three bedrooms I think is key because most of the duplexes are two bedrooms and that rules out a lot of families. And the fact that the garages are the common wall is brilliant, but that's not a policy conversation. And, are we ready to move the policy, or do you just want me to?
Do you want me to have more policy?
I'm going to keep going then for policy. Ms. Martin, do we have any other GPAs that we are projecting to come before us at this point this year?
None by private developers. However, later this year, should your council decide based on actions that were taken for March 31st, there could be another one, but we're not scheduled to hit the four this year.
Okay.
At all.
I just want to make sure if I was choosing or if I had still had four to spend, so to speak.
Yes.
And then this question, I don't know if I fully even have it articulated. If we say, yes, this sounds great, let's move to R2. It goes, let's try this, go run it through the process. It goes through the process. It gets approved to be R2. It's not tied to these buildings, this plan, correct?
No.
So could somebody else later on use this R2 to do even higher density? I mean, I know it still has to be approved through the Planning Commission, but I also know that there's a lot of state rules that make it hard to slow it down. And I don't want to start a train in a direction we can't slow down.
Yeah, if there was a new property owner, or if at some point the current property owner and the applicant here this evening decided that they wanted to go to R3, they could absolutely request that. I think it's a little bit of a higher jump from a policy consideration to go from R1 to R3, but they absolutely could request that be initiated.
So if it goes to R2, could it end up being two-story buildings or apartments, or does it open it up to that possibility even for them if they change their mind?
Yeah, R2 allows for multifamily development at a height not to exceed 25 feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was...
Thank you. That's a great report, and most of the questions were answered in the report, but I'm going to ask these questions. I think crossed off a few of them that already been answered. Will this project include any affordability component? Maybe that's a question for them. No. And the HOA is going to maintain the landscaping. Will the future staff report include a side-by-side comparison of R1 development potential versus the proposed R2?
We can. It would be a simple table. Okay. On the existing site at the gross acreage. It's like 3.75 acres gross, because we count density to the middle of the street. Under current zoning, you can have a maximum of 18 units. Under the proposed zoning, you could have a maximum of 33. This doesn't take into consideration public access, circulation, landscaping, et cetera, but that's the maximum that could be allowed within that gross acreage.
Okay. Is there only... Is there only one road in and out? Just
yeah,
one.
It's
one.
It's a loop.
Yeah, it's a loop. Yeah. Okay. How does this project compare with what could be built under the existing R1 zoning?
Up to 18 units max under the existing R1 zoning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just coming back to your previous question regarding the loop, the road, this project will be referred to Five Cities Fire Authority, and we also have, as part of our building consulting services, we have kind of a contracted fire marshal who provides feedback on these issues where they ask the question, does it meet fire code standards for the truck to be able to get in, access the roads all the way around? Is it the most optimal use of that space for an emergency vehicle? So if that's kind of where you're headed, do we need secondary egress? It's not like an ag road in the county where you have to have primary, secondary, et cetera. So it will be referred to them. They will provide feedback on the application itself.
To the study.
Which will be communicated to the commission as well as to your council.
Okay. I think that was it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions from council before I open up? Yeah.
So based on that, and if it stayed R1 and 18 units, would they more than likely have one egress?
They could. They could provide two. I think they'd be... I don't have a conceptual project in front of me for the 18 units.
18,
but they could
20,
have one
24,
or two.
30. Mm-hmm. It would be really up to the fire department to make recommendations.
Well, that as well as their engineer to look at their retention that's required on site, as well as where utilities, both dry and wet, would need to go for water and sewer. So they really got to make it all fit into the box.
Okay. And that's part of what this process would entail.
The next steps in the process, yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for answering those questions. I know we went a little bit further than initiating this, but I appreciate all of your patience. So I am now going to open for public comment on this item, and I have one speaker slip, John Ferguson.
Thank you. My name is John Ferguson, and I happen to be a homeowner in that vicinity, and I would like to say I'm not opposed to houses being built. We knew that was going to happen when we bought. I live directly across the street from that. To say that it's not going, you got one in and one out, and it goes to 16th Street. Certain times of the day, 16th Street becomes Indianapolis 500. There are so many traffic and cars flying down there. I have grandchildren that come and visit. They play in the front yard. That's one of my concerns. The other concern is, yes, by all means, build the single family units there. It was zoned for R1 for a purpose. And that was for the people that wanted to buy to live in an R1 zone. If we wanted to live in an R2 zone, we would have bought in an R2 zone. I mean, it's really, it comes down to that simplicity of it. Besides that, you're going to be increasing the construction. I live across the street. I understand what it's going to be with regards to noise and in the dust and everything else. That's the way it is. That's progress. I get it. I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid. You know, that's the way that it goes. I'm just requesting, yeah, let it stay R1. That's what that area is for R1. We came from a higher density area. Believe me, we bought specifically in Grover Beach because of the community and where we're at. And the comfort and the calmness of being there than where there's a lot more people, there's a lot more congestion. You got one in and out there. What do you think is going to happen on 16th Street? We already have people parking on both sides, which makes it difficult when you got two cars passing on 16th Street because it's not a four-lane highway there. It's a two-way street. So that's all. I appreciate your time. And it sounds like it's been an exercise in futility because it's already been pretty much said, go ahead and do it. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your comments. Clint Wyrick.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Clint Wyrick. I'm a resident, speaking as a private resident up in the nearby area. And one thing, too, that, you know, first I do want to say I appreciate as far as the applicant's intention as far as the economic side, basically, you know, below market rate, stuff more for the middle, missing middle. So I appreciate that intention. And they did host a voluntary, basically meeting stuff too amongst some of the areas last Wednesday where actually heard that presentation. Only myself and one other resident, unfortunately, were able to attend that too, for someone who lives down the street. Got a lot of our questions answered. One thing I do want to bring up that, you know, in addition to their voluntary efforts, reaching out to people, and hopefully that would continue if this moved forward, something to think about when it comes to the general plan amendment processes. In addition, there only being so many you could do too, that basically what the council has in front of you is if it didn't move forward with this, then the project as proposed doesn't happen. That's basically what that means. Now, because if it did move forward, though, there's different, that means actually that the city and stuff too has more, you know, conversational points within the applicant too. So one thing that I had mentioned during that community meeting that they hosted was, and they mentioned Hero Park, which is, you know, right, basically right across diagonal from the proposed area. And if you look at your capital improvement projects, your CIP, you know, Hero Park, you know, doesn't have a lot of funding intention stuff in the near future. They did indicate some possibilities and stuff as far as doing improvements related to that, because if it is missing middle, you do have more families likely to end up in that potential development. And so improvements towards Hero Park, I think, is important. It's one park that it's smaller, it's not Ramona, it's not 16th, but it is one that's used heavily by the people who live around there too. So if this process does move forward, consider as far as how that park could be formalized, because that's an area that's above and beyond, you know, what people normally do too. I know I've, you know, there's different talks about things like community benefits, and since they've seemed open to that as far as, you know, formalities, because like I said, once again, if these kind of amendments don't happen, then those projects don't happen too. So that's just something to put on your radar too for this, and thank you for listening to me.
Thank you for your comments. I do not have any other speaker slips. Does anybody wish to come up and speak? We'll do Ms. Storton and then Mr. Boyer. Oh.
Pamela Storton. So just a couple of things on this that are concerning. I like that project overall, but I do, as a real estate agent, find that I really thought we were going to see more sales on small lots, but numerous people that have developed in Oceano in particular are not seeing the sales that they like. People think that they want that small lot, and then it's too small many times for families. Now, you might get a lot of second home people coming over and some retirees, but I do find that second families are having a little bit of a hard time with the smaller lots. There's just not enough room. So that's one thing for consideration. We're supposed to be talking about a policy, a general amendment change, but we ended up talking about a development in order to sell the policy change and the general amendment. That should probably be done when it's normally done, because precedent will be set. And if this developer can't do it or decides not to do it, those could easily easily be second story homes, and it's kind of getting sold that they're going to be single level. It's not going to bother the neighborhood too much, so let's go ahead and do this. I think it's a little unfair because you're not showing the other side of what could happen. And to kind of change the general plan willy-nilly, to me, kind of opens up for the next person to come in and say, well, you did it over there, and you did it over there, and you need to now do it. So just as a policy, it seems to be like you should kind of stay on the schedule. And when you go about doing the rezoning, we have initiatives, we have things that may be changing. It might be the time to redo it all at the same time. I'm just concerned that a lot of these neighbors think they're getting, oh, absolutely side-by-side duplex style, single level, and oh no, the next thing you know, you've got two stories, they don't know it. It becomes a confusion for the neighbors, for the people, and then it just creates conflict. So I just feel like it should stay R1 until you go, until you do the general plan in general and take a look at it then. That's just for fairness of the community. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Boyer?
Hello, Council. Jeff Boyer. I own 1483 Farrell Road, which will share a fence with this proposed development. And, you know, first of all, I'd like to say that, you know, we were elated to find out that it was going to be a single-story development, you know, because you imagine the worst when you hear that your longtime neighbors have sold the one last remaining horse property in Grover Beach, which we will definitely miss our horses in the backyard. But, you know, it was kind of spoiled. I mean, how much can you ask for, right? So, yeah, hearing that it was going to be the single story and everything, I think we were very happy about that. I, after seeing the presentation here tonight, I do kind of question that amount of density on that space with the one ingress egress point. I think that could cause a bit of a bottleneck, but it does seem like if there was a way to work in a couple different ingress egress points to that circle, that seems like that might be a little bit better use. But yeah, as far as I do kind of agree with what Pam was saying that, you know, just in purely discussing R1 versus R2, the focus really should be on just what that change does for the property and not so much the actual development that's slated to happen. Because, you know, we're, like she said, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, we've thought for a while now, after seeing the initial draw up of it, it's like, okay, well, yeah, if it turned out like that, I think we'd feel pretty good. But you don't know, you know, kind of making it R2, what exactly that opens it up into. So I'm not sure if I was clear on, I think somebody asked the question earlier about if something happens along the way with this project, what you're deciding as far as R1, R2 falls off. So if that's the case, I mean, if this is only being approved as R2 for this project and its conception, you know, I mean, that's one thing. But otherwise, you know, I would just ask you to focus on just kind of the difference between R1 and R2 and if that's appropriate for the space. So that's all.
Thank you for your comments.
Good evening, Lauren Westfall again. I agree with everybody. There does need to be two entrances for all the what ifs. What if somebody takes somebody hostage, blocks off that street? You guys are all screwed. Secondly, with the R1 and R2, my question is the sewer. Can our sewer, is it going to hold up for the 30 permitted units? Or is the community going to have to pay for upgrades? My other question is, let's say 30 units got approved. Can all 30 of those units turn around and make their garage junior ADUs, which is going to be an additional sewer usage and water usage?
Excuse me.
So there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions that have not been answered, and I understand that there's stages.
Please. We cannot hear the speaker. Go ahead.
I understand that there's stages that do need to be approved. As far as the single stories, I'm good with that.
Ma'am,
but like
I'm
other
sorry.
People said,
I cannot hear the speaker right now. This is the second warning. Please be quiet. Thank you.
But like other people have said, let's say we did do an R2, and these developers turned around and pulled out. I'm sorry, there's a lot of trust issues here. You've brought other developers in, said they were going to do something, and then 6, 8 months, a year later, boom, we got something else coming along the lines. So we need to make sure when you guys change these plans that you're going to be consistent with these plans and follow through and not just turn around and get surprised that there's, you know, 3 stories, 4 stories. I understand we need housing. I understand we need affordable housing. But we need to be consistent and make sure that we answer all the questions before we approve anything. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Does anybody else wish to come up and speak on this item? Yes.
Yes, I'm Harold Reese, and I live in the neighborhood. And I'm concerned about what everybody else has talked about, going from R1 to R2. And if you cannot guarantee me that when you make it an R2, that they are going to be single-story homes, and I don't see no reason to have 30 homes in there, and I question the entrance on 16th Street, I'm like somebody else. At a certain time of the day, there needs to be an officer sit over there and write tickets. And the street is narrow. If you're not going to widen that street and take care of it, and there is another very interesting point, and I don't know if these people know it, this building, but the people that back up to that lot, they actually, I was told, own 3 foot of that back property behind that fence. So you guys need to look into that. Whoever built that original development, and I know a bunch of people that live there, said they took 3 foot of their back lot and moved that fence 3 foot in. So the property is actually their property. It's actually 3 foot behind that block fence, or it's a concrete fence. So, you know, if you can't guarantee me that there's not going to be 3 stories there, and there are 30 people in and out of there, you're talking about young families. Most of them will probably be 2 people working. So that's at a certain hour of the day, there's probably going to be 60 cars running in and out of that little single-lane street on 16th, and it's already a mess. It's very narrow. So if you can't widen that thing and do it right, like it ought to be done, don't do it. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else wish to come up and speak on this item? Seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line? Okay, I will now close public comment on this item. Just a few questions and then some comments that were made during public comment. There was a lot of conversation about what does R2 look like. We have an example of what R2 might look like from this proposed developer. In the next few steps, if we were to initiate this process, the study, where will we be seeing what R2 looks like? Like, will we be given the whole presentation of what R2 looks like, what it could potentially look like?
So the conceptual project that you have in front of your council this evening that pairs with the request, the GPA and the rezone, is what this R2 development would look like. R2 development and R1 development within our development code are allowed to have a maximum height of 25 feet. So if this development fell off and it remained R1 and they instead decided to develop 18 single family units on larger lots, every single one of those homes could be 25 feet tall. So R2, in the same, it could be 25 feet, but the conceptual project you have in front of you this evening is what R2 intends to look like as part of this project.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then at what process does we had a lot of comments and questions about sewer safety. I think we heard a lot of comments that I hope our developers were listening to regarding the entrance to the entire lot. That is down further in the process, like Planning Commission, after staff reports back to the developer and has their checks and everything. Is that correct?
Yeah, the purpose of this evening is whether or not your council wants staff to expend time researching whether or not this is an appropriate use of this land to upzone from R1 to R2. So as part of that analysis, we would look at utilities and infrastructure. We would look at traffic. We would look at impacts to neighborhoods. We would look at what the estimate of impact fees would be to ensure that they're paying their fair share towards infrastructure improvements. Somebody earlier made a comment about who's going to pay for the sewer improvements. They would pay for that commensurate with the proposed project. But tonight's purpose is just to direct staff on their workload effort and whether you'd like us to pursue this to provide for additional homes on this lot within the city.
Perfect. That answers my question. And thank you. I think it was said earlier that based on our discussion tonight, if we would like to move forward or have staff expend time, I think that's a great point to make, that to expend time on working with this, it opens more conversational points. And I think that's a huge discussion. It goes through public hearings. It goes through Planning Commission. There's more conversations to be had. This is the first step. And I don't want to stop at this point. I would like to see what it looks like to be an R2 zone. I would like to see what the sewer impacts might be, what the traffic impact might be, what changes can be made. So thank you for that. I would like to open it up to the rest of council for any other comments or questions.
Thank you. If we move forward with this tonight, obviously we're not approving anything other than the study. Can we stop it at some point and say if we don't like what's going on? Not in the middle of it, but when you're finished with the report, can we say no,
so
we choose not to go forward?
So when we make a recommendation to Planning Commission, it will be, you know, our comprehensive review of all of the information that we've been provided. And the Planning Commission at that point could make findings. This is a legislative action once we get to the decision-making component. So once we get to Planning Commission, they could make findings to deny the amendment, and it would remain R1, which effectively would eliminate the development application for the project that is, again, in concept.
But ultimately, will it come back to council?
And if the Planning Commission denied it, it would not come back to council unless applicants appealed that decision to your council.
Understood. Thank you. And you say time and money for the studies, but it's my understanding that the developers are going to pay for that time and money? So it's not costing the taxpayers any money to do the study?
No. No.
No what?
So we collect fees for the subdivision map, the development application, as well as the GPA and the rezone. So we collect fees and we work our time against those fees that are paid by the developer.
Okay.
What I mean by expend, I just mean as a staff resource, as a body. So we would be taking time away from
something
another
else.
Work program to also pursue this.
I understand.
Yeah.
But it's
so
it
would be adding to our workload.
But it's not costing the taxpayers any money.
No, sir.
Okay. That was important. I think that was it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Tuttle?
The ADU question came up. Would our code allow for those garages to be converted into ADUs after the build?
Yes. For R1 or R2. Each 18 single-family residential units, each garage could be an ADU. 30 residential units, each garage could be an ADU.
Would the HOA rules allow that ADU as well?
So the state, state law prohibits HOAs from barring construction or development of ADUs. They do not have the. They do not have the authority to prohibit ADUs as part of their CC&R.
So we could have an additional 30 ADUs along with the 30 homes. theoretically.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, just that potential is there.
Yes, it is an option.
Mm. Would you like to speak to that? You don't have to.
I'm extremely reluctant to, because this is a legal issue. Mm-hmm. We understand ADUs are a hot button issue. We would, to the fullest degree, not allow ADUs for a garage conversion or a JEDU as to the legal extent. We have come across some case law recently in San Diego that the HOA was successful in not allowing garage conversions. So, again, we're not attorneys. We're not saying that you can or you can't, but the intention is not to allow any ADUs within.
Can you come up closer to the mic, please? Yeah.
Sorry. The intention is not to allow any ADUs, whether garage conversions or, and really due to the lot size, there's not really an opportunity for an detached ADU, or really even, you know, building upon it in an attached fashion for an additional ADU.
Okay. Thank you for that comment.
He needs to talk.
As a citizen previously brought up, by zoning to R2, the city has some power to hold over us to agree to certain conditions that the city does not have if it stays R1. So if it stays R1, each home could theoretically get a garage ADU, so that's 18 times 18, 36, and a detached ADU. So it's 54 units. If we rezone R2, we can agree to write in the CCRs that is not allowed, and per the San Diego case law, that could be banned. Theoretically, we're not lawyers, but that's what it looks like.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Okay. Any comments?
Yeah, I guess you want to hear what I have to say. You're ready for that now? Okay. I'm super conflicted. I'm going to be really honest. I love the concept of the design, but that's not what we're voting on. What we're voting on and getting housing for that middle group, I think, is essential. And I do trust that the police and fire would weigh in on the egress, and they'd say, yes, there's an issue, or no, there's not an issue, and I would defer to them. That being said, changing to R2 and opens us up to a different type of development there that may not meet these goals that I think, yes, there's some impact. I don't want to be insensitive to the people who live nearby who will have some impact from it, but the offset of having some middle income housing is huge, and we're always looking for those opportunities. So I have that tension. And then I had another tension about, but I also think this needs to have a much more robust democratic conversation. So I lean towards saying, yes, let's move forward so that the community can continue to weigh in and share values and share direction. But I just have my concern that we went to R2 and then y'all went and did something else, not because you're not great humans, I'm sure you are, but things happen. And then we've now opened ourselves up to like some seriously high density housing in an area that was not prepared for that. I'm conflicted. I'm going to be honest. I'm still listening to you all.
Okay. I did have a question. And this kind of goes back to just my own neighborhood and curiosity. So in my neighborhood, just down the street from me, I know that there's a single lot that is now having 4 units built on it. Did it have to rezone?
No.
Okay.
Likely not.
So 4 lots, 4 homes are now going into 1 lot. But because this is a larger acreage, I mean, I thought the neighborhood I was in was zoned R1.
So it depends on your density. So R1 allows for density between 2 to 5 density units per acre. And they are requesting a higher density.
Okay.
So if you're in an R1 and they have 4 units on their lot, they likely are able to provide for it as part of a subdivision, as part of a planned unit development. I mean, there's any number of reasons why 4 units would have fit onto. It could have been an SB9 lot split. Okay. I mean, I am not sure of the exact case, but for theirs under, like I mentioned earlier, current R1 zoning, they can go up to 18 lots. and under the proposed R2, any to as high as 33.
Okay. I'm just trying to wrap my head around the numbers and thinking, okay, on it's one lot you can do up to five and it's not rezoned, but but
it's
what we're
more to do with
the
with the density of the zone rather than how many you might actually see. And then it's also contingent on the type of project that, that you saw.
Okay.
So,
and then just to reiterate, whether it remains R1 or R2, the height can be up to 25 feet regardless.
Regardless. Both are 25 feet maximum allowed height.
Okay. So that doesn't change height in any way?
No.
Okay. So then just my comments are, you know, I'm curious. I'm very curious. And I actually do have one more question. The idea of creating a study around this is, if we can waited for a whole study and we said, what would this look like with this one parcel, would we open ourselves into saying all the parcels surrounding that could be R2?
No, not unless...
So
no.
We'd still be looking at it kind of like one parcel at a time.
Yeah, this is site specific. So every property owner has the ability to approach the council and ask that their land be treated a certain way, either under the current development code standards or under a new set of standards and or a new designation like what's being requested today.
Okay.
So every property owner has that right to approach and ask under state law. And we then have an obligation, and your council has the authority to say, yes, let's see what that could look like, and let's go down that path, or no, I don't think it's appropriate here.
Okay.
And again, our codes do not have kind of that that framework by which your council would say yay or nay to the initiation. As I mentioned earlier, the county has that three-step process of necessity, timing, and consistency. And so that's why we kind of presented these open-ended questions for your council to consider this evening. Is it reflect the city's vision for where different land uses should be located? We find that it does, based on the land use and the housing element policies that we presented to you this evening. Would the GPA rezone conflict with other policies in the general plan? No, not that we found, but we want to dig deeper. Will the GPA and rezone affect neighboring properties or the broader community? Your community this evening is saying that they do find that it might have an impact. We want to make sure that we look at the traffic study. We want to make sure that we look at the circulation. What impact fees can we collect in order to make improvements to Hero Park, for example, to create a community benefit? Are the GPA and rezone consistent with the city's land use principles and applicable laws? Again, based on the goals and policies we presented this evening, staff has the preliminary recommendation that it does. And then lastly, is the timing of the GPA and rezone appropriate? One of your community members mentioned this before. There's a lot going on right now. And so is the timing of this appropriate? But the zoning and the land use designation of this property is different than what's under consideration as part of that other effort. And so we did find that it was appropriate, which is why you're seeing this item in front of you this evening for consideration.
Okay. All right. Well, again, it makes me curious to know what our options are. I, too, like the missing middle housing opportunity. Knowing that this isn't giving permission in any way for the developers here this evening, no offense, I think it's wonderful, but we're not saying yes to them. We're saying yes to questioning. How does this look? How does it feel? And having the answers reported back to the Planning Commission, to us, to however, but it goes through the whole process, and that's what we're talking about here today, is to ask those questions and get those answers. Then I have to say I am curious, and I think we do need answers. I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no, but I'm saying I would like answers.
City Manager Bronson?
Yes, Mayor, all great points in the council, and ultimately, one point that I think wasn't mentioned earlier was the time frame that this process would take. So again, the council is being asked to just authorize us to start a process to really delve in deeper to these different questions, these different concerns, different qualms, and see if there's a resolution that's satisfactory to the council ultimately at the end. So just a question from Ms. Martin, what is the typical time frame that this process could take?
Yeah, I mean, it's always contingent on the responsiveness of the applicants when staff provides their review. We are under obligations to review applications and get them back to the applicants with our questions within a certain amount of time. But likely you're looking at anywhere from 9 to 12 months. It's really the driving factor here is going to be environmental review. Mm-hmm. But we've already collected most of the environmental studies and the technical reports that we would otherwise require. We are already on track to begin some of our agency coordination and involvement, for example, with the Airport Land Use Commission. We've already kind of started those initial proceedings. And so I would say anywhere from 9 to 12 months, highly contingent on the environmental review of the project.
That is a great point. Thank you so much for bringing that up, Mr. Bronson. I would just like to echo Councilmember Macquarie Driscoll's comments about being curious. This is just the first step to see what it might look like. There are a lot of questions. We heard a lot of comments tonight, and I think that one of our goals as a council for Housing Element is a diverse housing supply, and this kind of hits the mark. Honestly, having the project here and taking a look at it made me a little bit more comfortable in reviewing this process already. So I'm sorry that it seemed like a selling point. I don't think it did. It actually, to me, made it more transparent and more open, showing this is what we would like to do, this is how we're going to make it happen, and this is the process that we're going to go through starting right now. So I think it's an optimal use of space as well, and especially next to so many great amenities like Hero Park, businesses. I mean, it's in the middle of two parks, really. So I would like to see us have staff move forward with this. So I will make the motion to authorize staff to initiate an amendment to the city's general plan and official zoning map to change the general plan land use designation and zoning designation from low density residential to medium density residential for a proposed housing project at 1591 Farrell Road to develop a 30 single story attached and detached residential units.
I have one more question.
That's okay.
Okay.
I did my motion.
Okay. I have one more question.
Hold on.
I'll second it, and
yes,
then she can.
Okay. Thank you so much. We have a motion, a second, discussion.
Is there at any point the opportunity, ability to legally, policy-wise, move forward the R2 and this development simultaneously? I know not at this point, but so that they're not ever out of step with each other, so we're not approving R2 and then starting the approval process?
Oh, I apologize if that wasn't clear. Both of these applications are running concurrently. They've requested it as such. Yeah. Yeah, so they'll be in step with one another. They'll go to the Planning Commission. Both items will be on a recommendation from the Commission to your council, and your council will take action on the amendment first and the development application second.
To be the devil's advocate here, not to start anything, I'm sure it's something they thought of. You already own the property, correct? Yeah. So they could develop this property as an R1 with two-story houses, and we could end up with 56 units on those properties. Is that correct? ADUs and junior ADUs, as you were talking earlier.
Again, we'll just go by the numbers. 36. So it'd be 18 single-family, two-story residential units, and each of the garages could be converted to ADUs. Yes.
And you can have a junior ADU.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a detached ADU.
So we have two-story buildings, detached ADUs, garage ADUs. That's a possibility in the R1.
Yes.
Yes. And so to your point, Mayor Pro Tem, the property can be developed with two-story homes today as an R1 development. Yeah.
But that's not what's being proposed.
That's correct.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we have a motion and a second. May I have any further discussion? No? Okay. May I have a roll call, please?
Mayor D.
Yes.
Councilmember Macquarie Driscoll.
Yes.
Councilmember Tuggle.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Yes.
Please let the record show Councilmember Wyrick recused himself.
Okay. Thank you so much. That passes. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Thank you to our developers for being here and showing the project. We are going to take a quick, let's get back at 8:05. Thank you. Break.
Ready? I'm going to hit the thing.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. All right. We will now go on to our next agenda item, the San Luis Obispo Countywide Regional Homelessness and Affordable Housing Compact and Regional Homeless Services Inventory. And I will call on City Manager Bronson to start the presentation.
Thank you, Mayor D. I'll just do a very quick introduction. The item before your council is to consider adoption of the Regional Homelessness and Affordable Housing Compact, also review a Regional Homeless Services Inventory. And to give a presentation, I'll bring up Linda Belch with the SLO County Department of Social Services. Ms. Belch.
Thank you. Good evening, Madam Mayor and honorable council members. My name is Linda Belch. I am the Deputy Director for Adult and Homeless Services for the County of San Luis Obispo. Thank you so much for having me here this evening. Homelessness is a regional challenge affecting all communities. Tonight, I'll share a brief progress update, a short funding overview, and share why approving the Regional Homelessness and Affordable Housing Compact is the next necessary step to sustain and accelerate local results. The five-year plan was adopted by the County Board of Supervisors in August 2022. The plan recognized that addressing homelessness requires partnership across sectors and requires the collective effort of public, private, and nonprofit organizations working together to build a seamless, well-resourced system that is easy to navigate and minimizes barriers for the people we serve. The plan was designed with this shared responsibility in mind. Reaching its goals depends on coordinated efforts by the county, the cities, and community stakeholders. In that spirit, we have worked alongside each other to implement system-wide changes, address gaps, and advance our collective vision. One thing is clear. The five-year plan set aggressive goals and asked for system-wide support, and it is evident from our progress that everyone is showing up and the difference is noticeable. In the past 3 years across the board, we have built system capacity, including a dedicated homeless services division, data modernization through the HMIS migration. We've expanded shelter and affordable housing and targeted behavioral health interventions like the Sobering Center and community action teams. We launched practical pilots and improved coordinated entry and point-in-term processes and have launched a public-facing dashboard. All of this is underpinned by growing regional collaboration. And the City of Grover Beach has stepped forward as a regional leader, supporting the opening of not just the first shelter in South County, but opening 50 new shelter beds with both the Cabins for Change and the Baleco Embarca projects. They partnered with the City of Aurora Grande to establish a permanent location for a warming center, the first in South County, added affordable housing, have set encampment management policies, and pursued $11 million in competitive awards, of which $2.4 million went for homeless services and supportive housing projects. When we talk about homeless services data, it's important to remember that the homeless services system encompasses more than those individuals counted on the single night of the point-in-time count. The system experiences both inflow of people experiencing homelessness for the first time and outflow as people exit to permanent destinations. The 2025 numbers show an encouraging trend as we saw more people exiting the system than entering for the first time. While our HMIS data overall, I believe my slides are out of contact. Here we go. While our HMS data overall shows an increased number in the number of unduplicated persons served between 2022 and 2025, we need to consider this a good sign that the investment into revising and strengthening the homeless services system, including migration to the new HMIS, has paid off in a more comprehensive data that captures the true scope of need in San Luis Obispo County. At the same time, as measured by the point-in-time count, from 2022 to 2024, the County of San Luis Obispo saw a 31% reduction of individuals who were experiencing unsheltered homelessness and a 19% reduction in overall homelessness. Early results from the 2026 point-in-time indicate we will see another drop in both of these measures, resulting in a 24% drop in total homelessness and a 42% drop in unsheltered homelessness since the plan began. What is most important here is trajectory. The homeless services system saw a 31.7% increase in persons served, a 42.5% decrease in first-time homelessness, and a 44.4% increase in permanent housing exits. While improved HMIS participation contributed to better data capture and likely accounts for some of the increase in the numbers of persons served, the decrease in first-time homelessness reflects significant investments in prevention. At the same time, an increase in exits correspond with an increase in affordable and supportive housing units coming online. The chart before you shows funding that comes through the Homeless Services Division. One item to note is that this is not inclusive of all funding that is invested into homeless services on an annual basis, as some county departments, such as the Behavioral Health Department, also receive funds for housing services, and those are not included in this chart. Additionally, as demonstrated by the regional inventory, cities provide funding directly to homeless service providers. Our biggest risk as a system is shrinking state and federal funding and a lack of a dedicated, ongoing funding source for homeless services. The largest source of funds in the past several years is one-time funding made available through the Homeless Housing Assistance and Prevention, or HAP, program. While there is one more round of HAP planned, HAP Round 7 has been reduced to $500 million statewide, about half of what was in previous rounds. Additionally, by design, counties are eligible for HAP funding based on unsheltered homeless data. This means that San Luis Obispo County will be eligible for less funding in HAPs Round 6 and 7 than we were in prior rounds because of our success in deploying those dollars and achieving results. Homelessness is a countywide challenge requiring unified action, and actions taken by one jurisdiction can directly affect neighboring communities, making regional coordination essential. The compact formalizes and strengthens this collaboration to improve outcomes, efficiency, and competitiveness for funding. It focuses on better alignment of efforts and resources and aims to position the county and cities to be more competitive amid shrinking resources. In 2025, the Homeless Services Division, in collaboration with the county's executive office, worked closely with a steering committee comprised of city managers from Atascadero, San Luis Obispo, and Grover Beach to develop the Regional Homelessness and Affordable Housing Compact. This document recognizes the complexity of addressing homelessness in San Luis Obispo County and sets forth a voluntary collaborative framework through which participating jurisdictions commit to shared principles to guide individual and collective actions. By coordinating regional efforts, the compact strengthens the region's ability to expand housing opportunities, services, and resources for those experiencing homelessness. It promotes collaboration to increase access to shelters, supportive housing, affordable housing, and services that help individuals regain stability. The compact is currently in the process of formal adoption by the entities, with a plan to hold a joint signing ceremony once all jurisdictions have approved it. This compact recognizes a simple truth. The vast majority of people experiencing homelessness in San Luis Obispo County have lived in our county for more than 5 years. They are longtime residents, our neighbors, and part of our community. The compact seeks to build momentum and consistency around a shared set of principles. Having shared principles is essential because they give every jurisdiction a common foundation for decision-making. They help us align policies, coordinate services, and pursue joint funding with a stronger, united voice. These principles also ensure we communicate clearly with the public and hold ourselves collectively accountable for measurable progress. The compact helps move the region from a collection of individual efforts toward a more coordinated and mutually reinforcing system of care. Importantly, each jurisdiction maintains its own authority while working toward shared regional priorities. By approving this compact, we strengthen our regional partnerships and position our communities to respond more effectively and ourselves to be more competitive for shrinking state and federal resources. The compact includes a regional homeless services inventory, which documents programs, investments, and services provided by each jurisdiction. This inventory improves transparency and helps identify opportunities to strengthen coordination and address gaps in housing and services across the county. The inventory provides a comprehensive look at the strategies, investments, and collaborations underway across all 7 cities and the county to address homelessness. It highlights not only the breadth of services being provided, but the strong regional coordination that continues to grow between jurisdictions, service providers, and community partners. I want to highlight two data points that stand out as particularly important. First, every city and the county participates in the unsheltered point-in-time count and in the Homeless Services Oversight Council, demonstrating full regional alignment in data collection, system measurement, and systemic decision-making. Second, all jurisdictions contribute funding and resources, either directly or indirectly, to core homeless services such as outreach, shelter, and rapid rehousing. This shows a clear countywide commitment to sustaining and investing in the system. The inventory makes one thing clear. Addressing homelessness in San Luis Obispo County is a shared priority and responsibility, and every jurisdiction is showing up. Approving the compact gives us structure without mandates. It formalizes collaboration, aligns our shared principles, strengthens competitiveness for grants, and promotes clear communication with the public. It also helps us manage encampments with empathy while maintaining safety and stewardship. To be explicit, the compact does not transfer zoning or land use authority. It does not obligate new spending. It is not a JPA and does not impose programs or policies. Each jurisdiction keeps full autonomy. Approving the compact builds on the collaboration that's already working. It strengthens our eligibility for scarce funds, reduces duplication, and improves outcomes with shared accountability. It's low risk and high impact. Thank you, and I am available for any questions.
Thank you so much for that presentation, Ms. Belch. Okay, any questions? Questions? Okay.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I was curious if there might be basically a phase two of this compact, you know, once the cities are concluded, because obviously we have other public entities like, you know, Lisa Mar School District and stuff's right here by, and, you know, Cuesta College, these other public entities that have a clear touch point with people too, that sometimes because they're not land use, even though they have their own land use authority, which is always interesting, that they're usually not part of these conversations. It's usually the county and the cities, but there's a whole lot of other partners that are already involved in this. So I was wondering if you know, once, you know, these primary, you know, the cities and stuff in the county is done, if, like I said, there will be a phase two of this to bring in more of those partners that are already engaging, you know, people directly and stuff who are experiencing homelessness.
Thank you. That's an interesting question. That hasn't been a conversation that's been had about creating a secondary MOU, but we certainly can include, especially our LUCMR partners. There's unfortunately a significant amount of families that are unhoused or unstably housed, and I think it would be great to look at how we can better coordinate the services that they offer. I know they have their homeless services individuals as well that help those families, so we'd be happy to explore that.
And I would encourage also, like, West College, too, because I know some of their residents, especially if they're going to have a new South County campus right nearby us, too, that, you know, there's different strategies with that, too. So that was my main area outside of just the normal things. Thank you.
Do you have any questions? Okay. Questions to my right? Questions?
On this compact, how will we measure that it's actually improving the outcomes?
So one of the things we're looking closely at is our HMAS data. Now that the system's migrated to a more robust system, we can better track where our families are located, where services are being accessed. We're working with some jurisdictions to create actually tailored reports specific to their jurisdiction. So those are all things we're exploring as our data matures. So we'd be excited to have that conversation with your city manager to see what would be of most interest to this council.
Okay, thank you. Well, what specific role would Grover Beach expect to be played in the compact, and what remains under our local control?
So everything remains under local control in terms of authorizing funding or any kind of land use, siting any new shelters. All of that would have to come through your approval processes. What we are looking for here is really to formalize what already exists, which is a strong partnership. Your city manager is really has his pulse on this. Like, he is very involved. He is interested. And so having those conversations, formalizing perhaps some arenas where we can have them on a more regular basis, so things like that.
And if we approve this compact, will it improve our chances of funding?
We believe it will. Okay. Right now, there's definite interest at the state level to see how cities and the COCs, the continuum of cares, the counties are partnering together, especially to allocate resources. So we do believe this is a tool in our tool belt that will help us be more competitive for those.
Very good. And I noticed in your report that Grover Beach itself is not a pro-housing designated. What policy changes or applications would we need to do to become a pro-designation?
So the pro housing designation typically comes through your housing development department. Mm-hmm. So that would probably be a question I'd have to defer.
Yeah, and to answer that, Mayor Burton, I'll bring up Ms. Martin, who can speak more to that particular point.
I did too. Where did she come from?
She's here good evening.
Under the table.
Surprise. Good evening. Community Development Director Megan Martin. So the policies that we adopted and established in 2022 as part of our development code update actually set us up successfully to apply for and receive pro-housing designation, competing priorities as part of our work program, just for the city as a whole, took us away from being able to expend staff time to submit that application. As you may remember, your council was brought an item and a resolution that was supportive of staff submitting an application for pro-housing designation. We were ready to submit, and the state changed their requirements immediately after the resolution was signed. And they said, now you have to take a complete application for the pro-housing designation to the council. So it has to be the comprehensive application. It has to circulate for public comment. I can't remember the timing, but for a certain number of days prior to that council meeting and allow for public comment. And it makes sense. You want the community to be a part of that decision and a part of the findings that staff is identifying. So unfortunately, since then, we haven't been able to reprioritize that, but we are ready and we are capable should you want us to shift things towards that designation.
Okay. Thank you. I think that was it for my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Any other questions that got brought up?
Go ahead. Does an individual city having that pro housing, is there a benefit to funding competitiveness? Is there a certain number of cities that need to have it within the county, or how does that look?
So I'm going to answer to the best of my knowledge for pro-housing. There is typically state set-aside funds for jurisdictions that have that pro-housing designation for you to compete within. It is regional, so you would compete within, the region of the Central Coast, and there's a certain amount of dollars that you could apply for, and that's about the extent of my knowledge on those funds.
But it doesn't impact the county's ability to get money collectively. For the grants that we're talking about that are coming through the county that are diminishing from the state and the federal government?
At this point, what we're seeing indicators from the state is that jurisdictions that have pro-housing are being awarded additional points in the competitive process.
Okay.
So it certainly helps us as a jurisdiction to be more competitive.
And what other cities do have that? Do you know off the cuff?
The city of San Luis Obispo and the county of San Luis Obispo.
Okay, perfect. Thanks.
And actually, I guess this is more just for our team, since on the inventory side, that it has that report at the end. Yeah, there's, and Grover Beach is in almost all these different categories. Outside of the funding ones, for things such as the, basically like the last one area as far as data and communication, and there are some simple things that I mentioned there, like uses official entity website to share information about homelessness services. I'm sure we could probably do that pretty easily. And same with affordable housing. Part two we already do, but as far as other areas like holds at least one annual or ongoing community meeting discuss homelessness, because we're going to probably have some of our it's scheduled next year and stuff to have some of our federal safety nets get defunded even further and changed. I anticipate we're going to probably have increase in homelessness at some point too. So some of these areas like that, and having the process for two-way communication with community members, leaders about homelessness and affordable housing. Could we do more of these simple ones too, especially since we have I see the 5 Cities Homeless Coalition executive directors here too with partners to facilitate some of these parts, because even though things have gone lessened since I've gone on this council as far as homelessness concerns from residents, like I said, next calendar year, I would foresee the economic situation changing since safety nets are dropping. We're likely probably going to have increased parts that are starting to bring this back to the surface of our residents' minds again. So for some of these areas, what's it take for us to do them? Outside the funding ones. The funding ones, I get, that's a much harder conversation.
Yes, council member, just to address them. Yes, regarding the website, that's a pretty easy addition. We already have some information, but I think we didn't have enough to merit being recognized here, but that's a pretty easy change for us. With regards to the annual ongoing community meetings, neighborhood events, the cities of Paso Robles, Atascadero, and SLO are recognized. I did talk to the managers in those communities to find out more about what they do. Keeping in mind that Paso and SLO have dedicated homeless services managers, mm-hmm. and so they're doing a lot of outreach because they have a dedicated general fund funded position, which we don't have. So that's one factor to consider. Atascadero may be a model that we could look at. They have an annual co-sponsored forum with ECHO. They're the North County version of Five Cities Homeless Coalition, and that essentially serves as the forum that they work together. They convene that together. So maybe that's something as we continue to work with our partners at Five Cities Homeless Coalition, we could have something that's similar to that to be able to have that additional dialogue. I'll add that we talk very frequently with Five Cities Homeless Coalition, all different levels, police, community development, our office, but that public forum could be another venue for the public at large to be engaged in the conversation.
And if we did that too, I mean, I think would it be something where that'd probably be a starting point? Because it notes the strategic plan to address homelessness and, yeah, like Cass, Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and county who have dedicated places, but also Morro Bay, which I thought was interesting since they're, you know, also a smaller community in respect to that, too. That, I mean, I assume our plan, because we already have existing partnerships, we have existing policies, it probably wouldn't be that long of a thing, but it would give not just, you know, this council, but other councils, you know, more or less a way to focus on these kind of issues.
Yeah, I can speak to that. That's correct. We do not have a strategic plan currently for homelessness. We have a lot of different initiatives, a lot of actions, and our focus has been on the actions, partnerships, and results. And as Ms. Belt mentioned, our results are very strong for a community our size. What we could do is just to put a brief umbrella around the description of what we do and call that our plan. I think that would really kind of be a linkage into the compact, into our council goals and policies and the actions that really define our success and results. And that wouldn't be a significant additional work effort on our end to just call it a plan around that.
Yeah, and if such a plan was put together, probably that kind of annual forum would make sense to, as far as the place to get feedback from the community, too. So that's, you know, those were just some thoughts when it came to that part, which were less of the compact, more of that inventory. But those are my only questions now for the inventory.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Nope. Okay, so I will now open up public comment on this item. I have one speaker slip, Devin McQuaid.
Right. Good evening, Mayor D, council members. Devin McQuaid, Executive Director of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. Just here tonight, I want to speak in support of the compact. We have made a lot of tremendous strides in the countywide strategic plan to address homelessness, and this is kind of that next step. So as Linda mentioned previously, a lot of this is work that we are already doing, that we have been doing for many, many years, and it really just kind of formalizes that. And I think from the perspective of an agency partner, over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, we've really started to develop these relationships with our agency counterparts, with ECHO up in North County and CAPSLO in the central part of the county. And the work that we've been able to see and do just by sharing our challenges and our best practices and making sure that we're all speaking the same language and approaching issues, you know, in a similar format so that we have consistent service delivery. We've seen the strides that we've been able to make across the county with all of our programs. So I think, again, this is just a, you know, formalization of the work that we've already been doing here in this city. Working with the city of Grover Beach has just been incredible. I think there's a lot throughout the county that can be learned from the work that has been done here between our, you know, agency and the city itself through many iterations of this council and different mayors. We've seen that the progress has just continued. So, you know, we've opened 2 separate shelters in what, less than 3 years. I look at things like the camping ordinance, but not just implementing a camping ordinance, but tying that with the availability of shelter and then opening up affordable housing. I can't tell you how many folks we moved into, you know, Cleaver and Clark Commons over the last couple of months. So I think this is really just a way for us to kind of open that dialogue, share those best practices. And as Councilmember Wyrick was mentioning, some work that we can do in South County. So we can already kind of see this happening live in the room of what this is meant to do. The city has already invested a lot in terms of funding and land and time into these services, but there are other things that are kind of small, simple things that we can continue to move this plan forward. So we would be happy to facilitate some of those activities. I know we've mentioned the South County Homeless Task Force a couple of times. Our partners in Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande have both agreed to participate in that task force. So with the transition and scheduling, we've been delayed a little bit, but we are looking forward to getting that started. And I think adopting this compact between the cities and the county is a great place to start those conversations and see what we can do, not just regionally in the South County, but across the county altogether. So thank you. Appreciate your support.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else wish to come up and speak on this item? Seeing nobody come forward, is there anybody on the line? Okay, I will now close public comment on this item. Thank you to everybody in the room for the presentation. I know a few years ago, housing and homelessness was a priority of our city council, and with the great work of our partners, the city staff, police department, putting all these puzzle pieces together, it has not been a set priority. We've been focusing on a couple of other things, but we know that we're still doing the work. We're still initiating certain policies and reducing homelessness, because there's not just one answer, and it sounds like this compact is a really great way to move forward and you know, all get together on the same page, because we are a region, we are a county. We all have the same issues, city to city, county to county. We're all in the same boat here. So any comments from council?
Thank you for your work. It's been great being on HSOC and seeing the collaboration and the amount of amazing human beings who are doing really incredible work and really moving the needle. I think this is fabulous to formalize what's not just to formalize, to lay a foundation for further collaboration and cross planning. So I think it's a great idea, and thank you to those of you that do the work on the front lines.
Yes, thank you very much, and that report was very informative. I support the regional coordination. My main interest is to make sure the compact leads to measurable outcomes and to better coordination and better access to funding. I'm very concerned about preserving our local authority and keeping our parks, streets, businesses, and our community safe. So I think it's a great idea that we all get together and do this as a team. So thank you very much for your hard work, and you as well, Devin. You've done so much. I really appreciate you.
Comments to my left?
Yeah, no, and I do appreciate where this is going to. I mean, when it comes to, you know, our shared constituents, basically, they just want outcomes to get done. I mean, as far as how they're get done, who takes care of it, and we're all different parts of different pieces of this too. So I'm supportive of this compact too. And like I said, I just would suggest that after the city side's done with the county, that explores too within those different education partners too, because we have 10 school districts in the county, County Office of Education, Cuesta College, even Cal Poly. I mean, there's a lot of these different public entities that are part of this that should be a part of it too. And like I said, if we're all working together, even better. Hey, you know, I'm sure funders would love to actually see all those in one page too. So that's just a thought. But yes, I'm supportive of the compact as is.
I too am in favor of the Affordable Housing Compact, especially considering that, again, we don't have dedicated staff to do this. This is something that our city manager Bronson puts under his umbrella and his staff so we're already kind of carrying an extra heavy load to begin without staff that other cities have. So I think the regional effort is key. And again, great job with everything we've been doing the past few years. I will say I'm very concerned with HAP 6 and 7 and the decrease in funding, because as an entity that also places people coming out of homelessness into a temporary situation, I know that the agency I work for is keeping people longer in that temporary housing position waiting for permanent housing, and we do so without funding. And I can only imagine the stress that creates on all the partners that are doing that now. And so this regionalism, I hope, will lead to great minds doing great things and creating, as was mentioned before, those other steps that get people back to successful livelihoods and on their way to becoming committed members of our community that are out there doing good things because they've got stable housing. So thank you.
Good. Thank you. All right. With that, I will move to adopt a resolution approving the San Luis Obispo Countywide Regional Homelessness and Affordable Housing Compact. May I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. May I have a roll call, please?
Mayor D.
Yes.
Councilmember Wyrick.
Yes.
Councilmember McCrory Driscoll.
Yes.
Councilmember Tuggle.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time tonight. We appreciate it. Okay. Now we'll move on to council committee reports. Councilmember McCory Driscoll.
Thank you. I only have one quick report, and that is the Central Coast Community Energy Committee met on the 17th. They basically had two items of note, and that was a recommendation to coordinate more with PG&E to help reduce customer confusion by highlighting the shared resources of 3CE and PG&E services. And they are planning a conference in Sacramento, the 12th through the 14th. And that's all I have to report.
Thank you so much. Okay, Councilmember Tuggle.
None of my committees have met. Just wanted to highlight that Wednesday is the chamber mixer at Vespera, 5 to 7. So if you're available, you want to network, it's a great place to be.
Thank you. Councilmember Wyrick?
Yep, I have two to report on. So on Thursday, April 16th, I attended the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, a.k.a. CAPSLO, Board of Directors regular meeting, and we conducted some routine business with reports from our liaisons for different programs, applied approved application for various funding sources, and had a presentation from our Child Care Resource Center on their work and impact in the families' lives that they work with. And then the second one is the Five Cities Fire Authority, a.k.a. FCFA. On Monday, April 20th, I attend the board of directors meeting as board chair, and it was quite a full beginning, at least. We started off in this council chamber's room full of colleagues, family, and friends for the official oath of cell offices for our newest firefighters. And both of them actually, again, one of them's in Rio Grande, the other one grew up in San Luis, so it's pretty great to see a lot of local talent here, too. And they're from legacy families in the fire service, too. So we're proud to have them and the work they've done and the work they'll continue to do. And we also recognized our engineer, Joe Ralston, for the completion of the Joint Apprentice Committee, a.k.a. JAC apprenticeship. That takes 36 months, and it trains to the higher state fire board standards. And we are starting the formal weed abatement program notification process with all the properties identified in the service area. So people will start getting those notices real soon. And hopefully get on top of that. And then we did have our annual state mandated public hearing on our workforce vacancies, recruitment, retention trends, which our agency's done well in. Applications, when we did have vacancies, have gone up. And obviously with the two new swearing-ins, we have no vacancies on the firefighter positions. And we did, we asked as far as what made those trends happen. And it looks like it's actually the wage adjustments that that were done to have made them more competitive. So there's more interest in our agency when it came to hiring. The main item was reviewing the community risk assessment standards to cover document. And I'll go into this one just a little bit deeper because of one point I'll bring up close to the end of this is, and that document went over a lot of aspects such as facilities, apparatus, equipment, personnel, policies. And some things that were good is we had improved turnout time from getting from the call to getting out the station basically. And other things that were included that were caught attention was the aerial ladder truck doesn't have the capacity to be stored in, for instance, Station 2 right here in Grover Beach, and there's some travel difficulties getting out here, which means that there's more difficulties in certain responses for those kind of instances, including parts of Grover Beach. Now, the document's intended to be used to build on more of a greater full strategic plan, but due to the financial implications of a lot of the different recommendations, the board did unanimously agree to have it come back to be formally presented in front of all of our agencies. So, yes, our city council will see it, and our city manager could be clear as far as that timeline. So one other good news that did come out of it was that our Congressmember Slade Carpall did formally accept into his community project funding list that submitted Congress, doing as far as paying into $2.6 million up to for one of our trucks, which if we get some of that federal funding too, obviously, that'll help out as far as his and our shared constituents together too. So we appreciate him accepting that project and seeking federal funding for it, and we'll look to see the outcomes in the appropriate timeline of those processes. So those are my two committee reports.
Thank you so much. Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
None of my committees have met. They all meet this week.
Okay.
Like four meetings.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. And I do not have any committee reports, so we will now move on to council communications. I just want to thank everybody who comes out and speaks during our general public comment. It's just nice to see everybody taking part in our process. So I do want to add, though, that as
as chair of this board, as mayor of the council, I've never discouraged anybody from not bringing computers or notebooks or phones. I have requested that they be put on silent because it can cause a distraction. So I just wanted to make that clear that anybody can bring their computers to take notes or look things up, whatever it might be. It's just we request that they're put on silent so that they don't cause any distractions for meetings. But I do appreciate everybody coming up during our process here, and we had a full house today to discuss many things, so I appreciate you all coming out. So the other thing that I wanted to add was on the 18th, the Grover Beach Elementary School had their annual spring fling fundraiser, and where they got to dunk the mayor, also dunk their principal, which was very exciting. But hence why I have the tinsel in my hair. It was a fundraiser, so I just love when our schools are doing these fundraisers and these community events, bringing the whole entire family out. My grandma was there as well. So it was just really nice to see the support of these schools and see all the different things that they're doing and accomplishing. So that was it for my my communications. So I will now go to Council Member McCrory Driscoll.
I just echo your sentiments. I was out there in the community last weekend, spoke with several members of the community, and it's just always great to hear from them, to know what's on their minds. It does impact my thought process, and so I'm just truly grateful for everyone this evening.
Thank you. Okay, Councilmember Tuggle.
I had, I think, a question. Hold on. Nope, I didn't. I was contacted by some youth in our community. That's okay. So you got the two?
I got
okay.
the two.
I was told they were going to be here, so I might have a little bit of a pause that they're not. Skateboarding is making a comeback, and we have a letter from a group of 7th and 8th graders who would like to see us upgrade our skate park. And it gives us some specifics, ways that we could possibly look at doing that. They currently feel like it needs to have more current. I'm not doing it justice. I'd rather them do it. So this may just be an introductory that I say let's pause till next week. Basically, they drive to San Luis Obispo because they have what they need there and because the place feels safer to them and their parents. And they would like to be able to skateboard here. So I would love to have a conversation with them and possibly with the Parks Department about what that could possibly look like, along with pocket parks. But since they're not here, I think I'm just going to see if they come next time and just let you know that there's a lot of little kids skateboarding. Teens. Skateboarding is making a comeback is what I'm being told by the junior high staff. And they are collectively hoping we can make our park, our skate park, a destination to go to. So, and I don't exactly know what that entails because I don't skate.
I think it's good to, just have it on the radar.
Yeah,
sure.
So put it out there and then so hopefully we'll see them soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Councilmember Wyrick.
Yeah, a few things and one request. So the first thing is last Friday, April 24th, I attended our City of Grover Beach's Community Picnic Day, hosted at 16th Street Park. It was a windy day, but once it died down, actually, we had a nice showing of families who made it out. In addition, those who always are already there, regardless if we do an event, since the playground does actually have quite a lively amount of youth who are always using it. And it was always good to have different conversations with different residents. And I did help out with Rotary Club Grover Beach in the preparation and serving of the free hot dogs for attendees, too. So who doesn't like a free hot dog? Unless you don't eat hot dogs, then you'll just get the other things. And then yesterday on Sunday, April 26th, I attended for another year the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center's 18th Annual Walk for Autism Awareness Fair. And there's always a lot of families, friends, and local providers for those living with an autism spectrum disorder that we bring awareness, connection to a lot of resources, and celebrate a lot of people with each other, too. There's always a lot of teams who are specifically made about one person, too. So it's great to see that. Something that was different this year is one of the different vendors, one of the locals, Kiwanis Action Clubs, they did promote. It's called the Blue Envelope Program. The chief probably is aware of this. But basically, they're looking to expand more within San Luis Obispo County, and it's to support both individuals, primarily those with an autism spectrum disorder, and local law enforcement agencies during interactions that are primarily traffic stops to reduce some of the misunderstandings and improve communication. So one side of it has instructions actually for the individual that that gives them on what they should do when it comes to interacting, you know, with law enforcement during these traffic stops. And then the backside of it has things up to you as far as what's in the envelope, like driver's license, vehicle registration, insurance card, then notes for deputies and officers, such as the driver may exhibit signs of anxiety or nervousness due to bright lights or jarring noises. And then, so basically the person gives it to them, and there's a whole communication part. And I looked into it further, and apparently other places do it too, and there's accreditation too. So I thought that was a very interesting way to help address that part. And one of the ladies who was there, her husband's a retired CHP, and she was mentioning to me how that that one of their family members and stuff, one of their kids, that it was a concern, especially during one part of his life too, as far as what would happen if he had these interactions. So I thought it was actually good to see how the awareness fairs bringing different kinds of solutions than they usually have too, as far as that. And I know obviously and stuff, you know, our police department's been very engaged stuff with some of the officers as far as autism awareness too. So if they're not looking into these kind of things already, you know, yeah, it might be good to look into that as well, too. So, you know, there's always good to see a lot of partnerships come out from these as well. Then switching off to another one, last Tuesday, April 21st, I did attend the San Luis Obispo County my desalinization executable solution and logistics plan, i.e. the desal plan, the feasibility study community engagement session that we hosted at the Ramona Garden Park Center. Since I haven't been on the County Water Resources Advisory Committee, the RAC and stuff, you know, I haven't been caught up on this in a while too, outside of the updates that Council Member Tuggles gives us. So it was good to, you know, kind of see what they were looking at too, as far as timelines, process points, and the five potential sites they identified, such as one of them, you know, our South County South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District outfall, and other places too. Of course, different diverse group of attendees, and, you know, county staff, consultants, partners, such as our own, yes, city engineer Greg Ray was one of the people helping navigate people through it too. And though desal is known for being difficult, you know, on the environment side, because it has to run continuously, no matter the usage, you know, that's being done or not too, they did acknowledge that, yes, it's very energy intensive and thus, you know, a very expensive, you know, process too, that's, you know, for drought resistance and resiliency solutions. But obviously we're in the earlier phases of, you know, about a 2-decade process. So it was good for me to just get caught up with it. And back to another water thing is on Friday, April 17th through Sunday, April 19th, I was part of this cohort of different local elected officials and local government staff throughout the state. And we did this, they called it an inspection tour of the State Water Project and the Central Valley Agriculture. And what was enlightening about that is there's a lot of components, a lot of pieces that in a lot of different places went to. But out the gate, they mentioned how that, yes, some of our reports show that in California over the next 20 years, we're going to lose about 10% of all of our existing water sources, essentially going to be gone off the table. And even the delta that they're showing us all this work on, too, the main scientist who's been working on this for it's close to 40 years, he had the no ands if or buts saying by the end of the century, which, of course, he caveated that. He's like, yes, you're all going to probably not be alive by then, too, but by the end of the century, basically, the delta is not going to be a usable source for clean water because eventually things like seawater intrusion, you know, will win. The Pacific Ocean will overtake it at some point, too. So, you know, once seawater intrusion takes over source, it's, you know, you can't go back. So it was interesting as far as how when they're talking about all these different projects and things that seem so far away, how even for areas like ours, it's important because of such huge water sources for the rest of the state aren't around. Guess where they're probably going to look to other ones and stuff in areas like ours too. So it was really enlightening. In addition, just to see all the work that's done on that. So those are my different reports. And then the request, since it was brought up during public comment way at the beginning again too, and put back on our radar. So as far as the issue of the way our city's plan that's available, an optional plan for council members on the healthcare side of things too, and potential negative unintended consequences for those such as on, you know, Medi-Cal, Medicare, or covered California. Yeah, I would like to see if we could get consensus to refer that to actually to have our staff facilitate conversations with those agencies to see if there's something to it, and even if there's modifications they could see. Because if there's something to it, then those agencies say yes, because you're because your policies and plans are written this way, it could have these consequences. That's good for us to know. And then also they would probably have ways to say, well, here's how it could be rechanged and readjusted to address those as well. But only, I mean, since healthcare plans are so specific to individual circumstances, I think it's those agencies that probably actually would have the best, you know, way to literally take a look at what we have and say, yes, this is the problem, or here's the fixes, though, too. I'm not sure. I hate to get in too much idea of HIPAA considerations, but as far as on the policy side, too, yeah, I would like to see if we could, you know, direct our staff to communicate with those agencies who would actually have the answers. So that's my request.
Okay, so Councilmember Wyrick has a request to direct staff to address the health plan discussion that was brought up during general public comment. Can I have a vocal yes or no if we would like to see that move forward?
Can I say yes with criteria?
Yeah. Okay.
Because giving benefits to council members who are stipend, not full-time city council, because most boards, for education boards, are often offered these, I'm curious why this is not a hot topic issue mm-hmm. anywhere. So, yes, I would like to get some context, but I also would like to limit the amount of staff time because I don't want this to become insurmountable amount of time and energy, because my gut says if this was an issue, it would be an issue everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, but I still would like the answer. So,
question
if we
really
can limit
quick.
The time.
Have we heard that it is, have you heard from any other jurisdictions that this has been brought up, has been an issue?
No, we have not. We, when this issue first came up, we did ask all the other cities in the county who have been providing benefits for far longer than we have, and nobody had ever heard this issue. So that was eye-opening that this had never come up in any other community in Slo County before. So that is just a note to pass along to the council. If you did direct staff to look at this, we would be cognizant of the time that we would spend, because this could be a significant work effort, and certainly we'd have to keep it very general because health insurance intrinsically gets into individual circumstances mm-hmm. and individual issues that we don't even advise our own employees about individual care. So we don't have contacts at Covered California. We don't have contacts at the other subsidized health insurance agencies. So just figuring out who to ask and what to ask would be the first step. And that's something that would be a first challenge for us. But again, if your council directs us, we will work on this the best of our ability, but we would concur in trying to keep some perhaps parameters around the time that we would spend on this, given other things that we're also working on right now.
Okay. All right. I think that that's a reasonable ask. Is there, for the council, is there a specific time frame in mind that, or a limit of time that we might, or maybe even staff can advise us of time? Or at least Councilmember Wyrick?
Yeah, I mean, it's been stated actually and stuff too the first time that public comment was done, that it's intended towards the electoral side of things too. So obviously, yeah, the ideal is before filing opens to have that answered. But that's, yeah, that was the person who did public comments intention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So can I have a verbal yes or no to, and parameters to our staff to move this forward?
So, I guess just from staff's end, what does the council want us to bring back explicitly?
So clarification on whether or not if you are offered benefits as a city council member, if that impacts your ACA or Medicare, Medi-Cal. My understanding is Medicare is not at all impacted by that. But I don't want to be the authority on that. And my understanding for the Affordable Health Care Act is that it could possibly be impacted if it crosses a threshold of, but it's, what's not clear is it your income, your total income, or what you're getting paid from the city? And so I would love to have that clarified. Again, nobody else is having this issue, so I don't want to get us too off task, but at the same time, if there's something that we're missing, then we should know about it.
So if that was the intent of the council, then staff could do some initial work on looking at that question and spending some time with the agency on that and reporting back to the council in a reasonable amount of time, but again, not making this into a extensive work effort beyond making some inquiries and trying to provide some initial information back on that particular question.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I am the HR person at my corporation. I think I already know the answer to that, but I don't think I can answer. But if you need help, let me know.
Okay. So.
And yes.
Okay. So we have five yeses to do some initial work on that request, knowing that it's probably going to be a tricky one. So, yes. Okay. It's pretty true. Okay. Sounds good. All right. Okay. So keeping with council communications, did we go through everybody except for Mayor Pro Tem? Yes. Good. Okay.
Okay. First off, thank you, Councilmember Wyrick, for supplying hot dogs at the 1623 Park. It was windy and it was cold too, but the hot dogs were good. Thank you. And I wanted to let everyone know that Zoo to You will be at the Exploration Discovery Center May 2nd, Saturday at 10 o'clock, I believe. And it's free. You can come. It doesn't cost you anything to see the animal. They bring all kinds of strange animals, raccoons and porcupines and boa constrictors. And yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what they're bringing this time, but one time they brought a kangaroo. That was pretty cool. It was small. It was a little one, a great big one. But, and, of course, pancake breakfast is this Sunday at the City Grange at Ramona in Manhattan. It starts at 8. It's over at 11. And also I'd like to make a statement in regards to the fireworks statement that I had made a couple of meetings ago. I wanted to clarify something that's been misunderstood. It seemed, and I watched the meeting again, and I can see how it was misunderstood. It seemed like I was suggesting that we arrest everybody for not paying their fines. And actually, it was a question I was asking the chief and staff and council, is it something we should do, consider arresting people for fines? And that was not a statement to arrest everyone. My concern is public safety, and I just want to make sure that what we're doing is enforceable. And the fireworks amendment seems to move us forward, that we've amended, and I think we're on the right track this time. So I think it will be enforceable. But I just wanted to make a statement on that.
Okay.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. And I've already said my communications, so we will now move on to city manager's reports and comments.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Just a few quick items. One is there's a lot of progress being done at Rona Park. The grass went down in the middle of the park last week, so it really is starting to bring the whole park together. You got the playground, the band shell is still under construction. That is, again, a $500,000 band shell, so a sponsor for that band shell is a really unique sponsorship. It's much different than other sponsorships that we have, which are plentiful at the park. 173 pavers are going to be laid out and just be beautiful here very, very soon. So the park is really coming together well. We're excited to unveil it coming up in June. On a very different note, the sewer upgrade project is also progressing very well. A lot of activity on Rockaway right now. Last week it was on 9th Street, so you see the sewer trucks and excavators and all the equipment marching down the street and upgrading our sewer lines to modernize our infrastructure. So a lot of great work being done there. Keeping with the utilities theme, on May 13th, we have a water supply study public outreach meeting at 6 p.m. at the Ramona Center. This will be an opportunity to hear about the city's water supply sources, some of the vulnerabilities and challenges to those sources, begin to get some information about different options that the consultant is looking at, and just begin the process around public engagement. We'll have a second forum coming up probably in June, and we'll land on that date here pretty soon. We also have a survey on our website at groverbeach.org/water supply study, I believe, our URL for that particular site. And then just credit our community services staff for their great job with Picnic in the Park this past Friday, as well as Grover Beach Rotary. And then this Saturday is the Tour of Grover Beach Bike Parade. We're looking forward to continuing rolling forward with our special events, pun intended, over the next several weeks with mother-son dance and game nights and movie nights and summer concerts and a lot of great events coming up in our fair city over the next couple of months. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Okay. And we do not have a closed session tonight, so I will adjourn this meeting at 9:01.